Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
This time of year, it always puts me in a giving mood.
Oh, I see you decorated.
Good morning. I see you're in early today.
Yeah, well, I have a 4:30 massage, so I thought I would come in before 10 today.
Now, lazy ass Lisa thought it would be a great idea if I decorated our area. Because, as she put it, I have such great style. At first, I was totally pissed off. Because once again, Lisa was passing off work that she thought was beneath her onto me. But I didn't want to come across as the angry black Scrooge. So I found a little holiday spirit. And suddenly, I was in a very giving mood.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, I've just never seen anything like this before.
Like what?
Your interesting Santa. He's so dark.
Oh, that's Leroy. I've had him for a couple years, so I know I thought I'd share him with the office.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
I love my new trainer.
Yeah?
I had my interview training session this morning, you know, before I get the gift next week. Mm-hmm. He's so cute. What's that?
Leroy.
He's black, but Santa isn't black.
Mm-mm. Excuse me?
So I bet you think Jesus is black, too.
Well, considering where Jesus was born and the fact that his hair was like lamb's wool, I would say there's a strong possibility that he wasn't white.
That's ridiculous and a little racist.
I know this stupid racist bitch ain't calling me racist. I'm not the one claiming that there's only white Santas. Ooh, I'll be so happy when this stupid bitch leaves.
He's just so big and black. I mean African-American.
Kathy hasn't been by my cubicle in a week. When she first saw Leroy, she was frightened by the big black, I mean African-American Santa.
What up, Leroy?
Y'all know I can't make this shit up. My week turned out to be pretty peaceful, actually. Because everyone was avoiding Leroy, they were avoiding walking by my desk to bother me. Oh, I love the holidays. I was even looking forward to our holiday party later that day.
Well, I can't believe we're each other's secret Santas.
Oh, right. Thank you for the,
I am so glad you love it. You know, I thought of you when I saw her. She looks a little like you. And she would go perfect with your Santa. And thank you so much for this $25 gift certificate. I just love this boutique.
Yeah, well, there was a $25 gift limit.
Well, Merry Christmas.
Everyone, I want to say thank you again for another awesome year and wish everyone a very Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Oh, and happy Hanukkah. Oh, and happy Kwanzaa.
What's Kwanzaa?
Oh, I don't know either. It's just some shit we made up.
Now, before we all start eating, John Howard has an important announcement for us. For those of you who do not know our COO and legal advisor, John Howard, his office is on the 10th floor.
Thanks, Kathy. I know I don't make it down to the 5th floor as often as I'd like, and unfortunately, today I'm the carrier of some awful news. I don't know how many of you heard rumors of some changes made to our little close-knit family, but I'm here to confirm that as of this morning, Brendan Davis is no longer CEO. Brendan was detained on fraud charges and has stepped down to focus on his legal problems.
Yeah, I already knew, because Derek read some confidential mail 2 days ago.
We hired a new CEO this morning, so I wanted to introduce her to you all before we leave for the holidays. She's a Harvard graduate. Has over 20 years experience building companies from the ground up. We feel she's the best candidate to lead this company out of the bottomless hole that Brendan has dug for us.
Great. That's just what this place needs. Another insecure, entitled white chick.
Everyone, I'm pleased to introduce to you your new CEO, Kenesha Jackson.
Excited for this opportunity to lead the change that is going to come here. I know there has been a significant decline in sales and popularity over the last few years, but I remember how great this company was when it first opened its doors 10 years ago. The road ahead is long, but I am confident that if we all work together, we can get our company back on top.
Yes, we can. It's all her fault. She brought that awful Santa in here. Now we have a black boss. What am I going to do? It is going to be so ghetto in here. I don't know how to... Dougie.
Ooh, yeah, boy!
Daddy always said that if you let one in, before you know it, you're infested with them.
I bet you Racy will get promoted before me. This is so unfair!
I'm so glad I'm leaving this ghetto place.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, November 10th, 2016. So I have been told. This is our weekly session on workplace racism. The number to dial is 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Certainly if we have black entrepreneurs, if you are, as they say, self-employed, please dial in. It's always appreciated to hear your experiences as a black business person. In terms of how you are experiencing racism, if it's a problem for you at all, if you have problems working with other non-white people, if white people are involved with your business in any way, shape, form, definitely important. Please be one of the first folks to dial in if you are a black entrepreneur. Moving forward, certainly want to continue to encourage folks to share. If there are portions of your policy and procedure that you've kind of reviewed, I encourage reviewing your policy and procedure anyway, in its entirety. Check it out. Even Forbes, they recommend read it in its entirety before you agree to be employed at a particular job or company or whatever it is. That way you know what's going to be expected of you, and you get a much better perspective on the environment that you're going to be immersed in 40 hours plus per week. But check the whole thing. I've said consistently, break it up into small chunks. You can read, 5 minutes a day, 10, 15 minutes a day. And, just make it take a week or even 2 weeks to read. Read it before you have an issue. That's always best. That way you're not reading under dire straits, being nervous and with the threat of something really bad going down if you don't find something on those pages to help your cause. Just read it at your leisure. And that way you can see how it's being applied on a day-to-day basis. That is best. So that's what I recommend. But in reviewing your manual, if anything sticks out, word choice, if you see things not being enforced consistently, dial in. Let us know. I think that's always good. And just to see the way that words are used in those type of settings when we're talking about rules and policy and procedure, I think that's significant as well. A lot of times word choice aids in deception. That said, and certainly today, even though this is workplace racism, I am very sure that there are many listeners out there who have had some very interesting experiences in the workplace over the last 48 hours since President-elect Donald Trump snatched the White House. If that has come up on the job, talking about it, people asking you what your thoughts on the election are, if you voted, what do you think about Trump being the next president and all that, certainly dial in. And if you have figured out some codified strategies, that is always appreciated. A couple things that folks wrote in, and then we will get cracking. We've had more participation in terms of people writing in commentary the last few weeks, so I wasn't even able to read everything from last week. So one person wrote in. This is Jay from New York. I have my own business, as mentioned this evening, so he called in last Thursday. But I also maintain a plantation position on the human resources side from time to time. After becoming more informed, I've realized that I can assist non-white people by opening up more doors for them to gain employment by pushing out potential opportunities in these types of forms. I'm currently hiring for a company in Missouri. Their unemployment rate in that area where the factory is located is under 4.5%, while the inner city is about 12.5% reported, but I know it's much higher. While I'm working on the inside, I'm trying to find ways, since I recruit virtually, to connect with non-white job placement organizations or just individuals in the area in hopes of spreading the news about the positions, without leading on to the employer that I'm placing a lot of energy trying to heavily recruit from this one area they don't consider at all. I think there are some listeners from this area, and I just wanted to extend myself in hopes of at least being able to employ some people so they could make some money in this unjust system. I can forward details once I have them finish up the flyers they are creating for the veterans. So if we have folks that are in the Missouri area and you are interested, possible employment opportunity, if you want to drop me an email, if you put Missouri employment in the subject, that would be helpful for me to keep things organized, and I can forward the contact information along and see if that will be of some assistance to someone. But that sort of thing is constructive, and hopefully we can do more of that as we roll. Next person wrote in. This is Sister Locks from Baltimore. I will be happy to read and share parts of the arbitration agreement, which I had to sign in order to begin working at my new job. Agreement to arbitrate. In the event that employment disputes, as defined in section C below, arise between the company and the employee, the parties agree to resolve these disputes through informal means. If these informal attempts at resolution fail, the parties agree to submit the dispute to final and binding arbitration in accordance with the Federal Arbitration Act, or if that act is not applicable, in accordance with the applicable state law equivalent. Such arbitration is the exclusive remedy for both employee and the company as to any employment dispute, regardless of whether it is based in tort, contract, statute, equity, and or other laws, unless otherwise provided by law. Except as otherwise required under applicable law, employee and the company expressly intend and agree that class action and representative action procedures shall not be asserted, nor will they apply in any arbitration pursuant to this provision. Employee and the company agree that each will not assert class action or representative action claims against the other in arbitration or otherwise, and employee and the company shall only submit their own individual claims in arbitration and will not seek to represent the interests of any other person or entity. The agreement shall not be construed to create any contract or continued or defined employment, as does not alter the fact that employees of the company are employed at will and can therefore be terminated or voluntarily reassigned at any time for any reason or no reason at all, and with or without notice. This agreement shall survive the termination of employees' employment with the company and shall apply to any claim, dispute, and or controversy that arises during or after the termination of employees' employment. That sounds very much like white talk. And particularly, I think, as they would say, covering their bases to make sure that this agreement is going to be explicit, that's going to be in our favor, and no way that it can be processed or read or interpreted in any other manner except a manner that is going to be favorable to us. On all of the terms that we lay out, we can fire you, maybe we let you know why, maybe we don't, maybe we give you notice, maybe we don't, maybe we can reassign you, whatever we want to do. If you check, it's going to be a lot of verbiage like that in these documents, and I think a lot of this stuff is just done to intimidate you and to wear you down with the buckets of words so that you don't even read closely what you are agreeing to. That's a steady tactic of racist man, racist woman, racist child. Next, I had a quick observation about post-election behavior by the usual suspects. I've noticed an increase in scrutinizing glares and glances by supervisors at my workplace following the Donald Trump election win. It's all done in a manner reflective to the sort of questioning by usual suspects following nationally covered race-related controversies such as the Philando Castile murder. The questions tend to range from asking me how things are in my personal life, if I'm dissatisfied with my work environment, etc. General probing that seems to indicate something other than concern for victim welfare. All of this, in my opinion, is irregardless of my physical demeanor. Does anyone suspect that this line of questioning by supervisors may serve a legal precedence-setting purpose in painting a picture of emotional instability in the victims questioned? What are the best sort of replies? I think racists, if that's what they want to do, I think in this system, if they decide a nigger is crazy, the nigger is crazy, and that's just that. So it's not a whole lot you can do about that. But what I would say is just if they ask, I would assume that any conversation that takes place in the workplace could end up in your employee file, could be a part of some sort of employee evaluation, could end up being permanently in your personnel record. I would just assume that. So I would not think that, you know, just because you have some sort of rapport with this white person, if that's the case, I would not think that I'm speaking off the record, or we can just have a candid, you know, 5-minute chin wag and everything will be cool. I wouldn't think that at all. I would think that this is very serious. So I want to always be very careful about what I say, how I respond. If you notice that they're asking and you think it's, you know, election related, like they're trying to suggest, oh, our poor little Negro, his feelings are probably hurt because we voted and got our Donald Trump guy in there and he's probably a little sad. We'll go and ask how he's doing that. If you think it's, you know, something more than that, where they might be trying to say, oh, you know, we got a little surly Negro, we're going to get rid of him and say that it wasn't a right fit and he just didn't seem satisfied and that was affecting our work environment. If you think it could be something more serious, I would just, as I've stated consistently, you want to make sure that you're not aloof on the job. Speak to everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, whatever time, you know, you happen to be on the job. Talk to the people that are there and make an effort to talk about work related things. If they're asking you these specific questions, how are you doing? What's up? Whatever the types of general questions are, how are you doing, that sort of thing. I would try and be as specific as possible. I probably wouldn't give them like Mr. Williams when he said as well as can be expected or write poorly. I probably wouldn't give them that. I would probably give them something that's vague, you know, just trying to stay on task. Or I would be work specific. You know, it's another day. I'm working on such and such a project here. You know, the first few portions of it were giving me a little trouble, but just stayed persistent and plugging along here. Looking forward to making have an efficient day. That sort of thing, where even then you are talking about how you're doing, but even that is work related. And just give them a little detail and keep it moving. Again, that way you're not seeming as though you're aloof. You gave a little detail. You keep going and then you can throw it back on them. How are you doing? And then see what they say and just go from there. But if you get any notion, the person who wrote this in, if you get any notion that it's more serious thing where they might be trying to take it in the direction, like I said, of, you know, you're depressed or you're sad, I would just, you know, address that head on. Nope, I'm fine. I think Ross has done a really good job as well about laying out consistently just, you know, I'm just about business. And, you know, that's just the type of personality that I have. I take my job very seriously. I have a serious demeanor while I'm on the job. And that's just not about doing a whole lot of, you know, cracking jokes and gossiping and talking about TV and that sort of thing. That's just not the way I carry myself. And, you know, let's just go about being effective, efficient in the workplace. I have a few others, but I will save those as we go. The audio clip we played at the beginning of the program, that is from the web series 40 Hours and an Unwritten Rule by Kim Williams. She was a guest on the program, black female, 2 years ago, back in the summer of 2014. Her whole web series is about workplace racism, the triumphs, tragedies, problems, ordeals of a black female in a predominantly white work environment. I thought it would be funny to play that segment today because, number one, it is getting close to what they call the holiday season, and that is going to be an important aspect of codification that we will need to kind of dust off and prepare to use again over the next probably 2 months or so in terms of responses, how we want to function in light of all these parties and nonsense that's going to go on over the next 2 months. But just to have that in mind, and then also towards the end, I think they have they get a new black CEO, and you hear all of the ranting from the whites on the job about how disgusting this is to have a black person in charge and how they think they're going to be mistreated and the blacks are going to get all the goodies on the job. She has a lot of all of the segments really deal with workplace racism. If you want to check out her series, or if you want to go back in the archives and check out her Visit to the Cows, summer 2014. With that, we will hit the phone lines. I will say again, I generally am not about, you know, really trying to go out there and encourage folks to call in, to ask questions. We have guests or share their views or what have you. But this program specifically, it is very important. Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, she said consistently that if you have a collection of black people, I wouldn't care if it's five black people, you should have robust conversation about workplace racism and all the things that are happening to us on the job, not being correctly compensated, being written up, having to deal with just all that type of nonsense, people staring at you or asking you questions that have nothing to do with what, you know, the job is about or what have you, whites or other people being promoted above you who are less qualified, or people that you train, the myriad of problems that we experience. This should be something that we're talking about. I think we have a lot of victims, unfortunately, either don't have an outlet or have just been discouraged from talking about things that happen to them. So we just kind of clam up and deal with this sort of thing, suffer, a lot of us, with this sort of trauma. Real important, I think, to share. Again, we have a lot of people who are younger, so they don't have an extensive workplace experience, a workplace history. They don't know a lot of the tactics and things that racists employ on the job to make things difficult for us. So it's always helpful for them to be able to hear the types of things that other people have experienced. I think for all of us, it's good to be able to see the patterns and the type of things that racists do on the job. I think that adds a lot of clarity about what it means to be white. And I think it gives us a great opportunity to kind of codify in advance, so we know the types of things to be on the lookout for. And we can be preemptive in our counter-racism, so we know the types of things that can help us to stay out of trouble. That's the best way that you want to try to tackle things with regards to workplace racism, is to try to address problems before they even crop up, because you know the type of things that are going to be trying to be done to you. With that, the number again, 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-HOUND. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Hopefully, we will not have spectators, certainly not on this week. Folks can share and we'll hear what's been happening. The folks who dialed in, who have a hand up, lines should be open. Feel free to share.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I was, so I guess like the strategy that I used a lot just to sort of like overall on my job is that sort of like, I don't know, it's ironic, or I don't know if that's the right term, but this week, like with Dr. Welsing's prediction and whatnot, I'm a former Howard alum, and well, I'm a Howard alum, and I remember once I used to go to Dr. Welsing's discussions, and I remember once like there was a young man in the in the audience, and it was during like the Q&A, and he was slightly agitated. I think that was his first time there, and he was like, this is new information for me, like, after she had spoken about racism and white supremacy, and so he was like, what do I do? And considering that we're on a black college, and there were very few like students there, it was mostly people that were from the neighborhood. And I thought like Dr. Welding was going to be like, oh, you know, get people to come or buy my book or do this. Like, because she's like so skilled, she was like, the first thing that I would tell you is to be calm, like just be calm, calm down. And she like talked with the person like very personally and like really emphasized calmness. And that's the way that I try to approach everything these days. It like took me back, but it's something that stayed with me. But on the job, two things happened. People at these like large corporate entities, you do like online modules, and we did an online module titled leaders, like sort of like leaders eliminating bias. And it was all about, it was like an hour long sort of like videos and like learning modules. And they used the word diversity like 30 times, like so many times. And they used everything under the sun, except really talking about what they were really talking about, which was racism, white supremacy. It went on forever about all these things. And then what was classic about it to me was that at the end, they were interviewing the sort of like the leadership of this corporation. And at the end, they had like pictures of all the people that they had just interviewed that were talking about. And the focus of the diversity was called diversity of thought. So that was it was always diversity of thought. But the pictures were just of, it was like 8 executives and they were all white and they had just spoken about diversity. So I thought that was ridiculous. I sort of like took a picture of it and like emailed, I sort of like texted to some people and we had a good laugh about it. But as of this week after the election, I noticed that people, I'm the only black person probably in my office, and they were really happy. Like the meetings, sometimes we have like really long, exhaustive meetings, sometimes like 4 hours where like people are just tired at the end. But this week they were giddy. There were all kinds of jokes, all kinds of metaphors being thrown out. So that's what I noticed. And thank you for taking my call. Thank you.
Well, that sounds like that might have been a great environment to have your recorder or what have you to get all the jokes and metaphors and everything else that was being said in their moment of euphoria. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in who have a hand up, if you have commentary, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, everybody. I have a few notes about, and excuse me. I wasn't surprised. I want to go ahead and give Dr. Welsing some kudos and much respect because I was very, 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 very prepared for Trump to win. So I wasn't surprised. I won't lie. I have fear around it. I have a little bit of anxiety around it too, because for me, I feel like we're really, really close to where Hitler was with the Jews. And at any moment, who knows what could happen. I'm 1842, so I'm out here in Virginia. So I'm very much aware. The temperature is totally different. White people are really, really happy, very, very excited, very bold. But I've been standing my ground, as they say, and making sure that my nonverbals exude that I'm not having it. I'm not ready to fight or anything, but I'm also not over here sulking or, you know, shaking in my pants or anything. A few things that I noticed at the workplace, it didn't happen specifically to me, but so many people were telling me about how white women, and men too, would even come to their desk crying and wanting to hug them. And so I heard many stories like this. It didn't happen to me, but that was something that I noticed. And I was like, look at that refinement. Look at that refinement. Some of the things that I've done at my job, I was slowly in the process of becoming far more codified. And I felt like Trump getting elected just allowed me to just, you know, finish it, just, so to say. I had slowly begun talking less and less about politics, less and less about race, and just kind of stepping away from that with some of the non-white coworkers that I had wanted to, in my mind, put on. And so non-white coworkers wanted to talk to me about it, and I simply just said, I'm not talking politics at work. You know, not in any kind of, like, mean, aggressive way, but I'm not talking politics at work. And then they kept trying and kept trying to bait me, and I was like, I'm good, y'all. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not being disrespectful or mean. I'm not there. And then if they did it again, I would just be like, well, I got stuff to do. I'll catch y'all on the flip and, you know, go do my work and stuff like that. On the day after, I came into work and I just handled business. I didn't act as though nothing had happened, but I kind of did. I mean, I was so productive that day, it was ridiculous. I didn't make myself available to be around any of the dialogue, any of the conversations. Like, you couldn't catch me to try to bait me. And I'm talking about the white people. Non-white people I would put myself around to talk to, but the white people, you just couldn't even catch me. You'd have to radio me to find me. And if you ever, like, caught me at the desk, I was already on the phone. Like, I stayed so busy that day. I paid attention to whatever they were saying, which was really all lies. I loved, like, they're just great liars. And they're like, oh, we can't believe he got in and such and such and such. But then we'll turn around and be like, but you know, Hillary Clinton's concession speech was a little disrespectful. I mean, she didn't really say much. It was like, well, why does that even matter if you really didn't want him in? So, like, they're just great master manipulators, and I just wasn't falling for it. And they tried the property manager on the way out. He was like, you all right? I was like, I'm fine. I'm sitting here wrapping up work. How are you? You know, and kept it moving and made sure, you know, I made my eye contact to make sure I could watch. Like, I like making eye contact with people because I can see when they get glitchy. So I made sure to do that. But then some of the other things, like, I pretty much, not that I ever had a lot of personal paraphernalia or anything like that at my, like, workspace, but I made it so sterile, but over a slow period of time. Like, I didn't do it all in one day. Like, I just, you know, it was, like, little by little over the past, like, week and some change. So, like, my workspace is super sterile, even my locker. Like, right now, I could never go back. I wouldn't feel any type of way about anything that's at work or anything like that. So that was just a little bit of, and I'm not so sure if that's codified or not, but it's definitely making me feel better. I even went ahead and was like, I'm done with the social media in the way that I've done it before. I even let folks know so that, you know, I could stay in contact with relationships that I had built. But I didn't say when I was going to do it, and I just shut all that down and did it a different way, so to say. So that it's, you know, just smarter and less like it isn't what it is. Because Trump being in office is something I take very, 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 very seriously. And I'll just say this, just in case there's anybody else who might, like, you know, have stress or anxiety or worry or anything like that. I have made sure to get my workouts in. Like, no lie, I don't, you know, for anyone else who might, just because it totally helps to reduce the stress, anxiety, and keep my mind from worrying and, like, being preoccupied or anything like that. So if people are out there and they deal with anything similar, just I've been making sure to take care of my mind, my body, my spirit. I try my hardest to just every morning get centered, get calm, get focused, make sure I restate my mission, make sure that I surround myself with, like, exuding energy that says, not I'm not the one, but that's also not, like, as they would say, aggressive. And I've had little instances, too, where, you know, white people have tried to, like, come into my space or, like, microaggress me or just do something like that. But I've made sure to stand my ground and say, well, hey, just because, you know, he's in office, it doesn't, like, we're not going back into whatever time before. I'm not aggressive with it, but I'm making sure that I am, in my mind, it's self-respect. But I don't know how it comes off to other people, but those are some of my observations and some of the things that I've done since the last time that we've spoken to codify and be in a better place. Thank you for taking my call.
For sure. I'm a big proponent of that. I think that's a phenomenal codification. And just, you know, hey, I don't discuss politics on the job, and leave it at that. Not having, you know, a big 8-hour symposium to explain why I don't talk about politics on the job. They go, well, wait a minute now. This was a historic election. I mean, did you vote in? And what do you think? And, you know, people are going to talk. I don't talk about politics on the job. And they get, well, you know, I got some few things to work on. I'll see you later, Peggy. I'll see you later, Sam. We'll talk later on after lunch. Okay. And just keep it. And you're not being rude. You're not being nasty. Just this is my code. I just don't, you know, discuss this sort of thing on the job, and stick to that. Just be codified, like I said, and work that out in advance. Because I think, unless I'm misinformed, you had even talked about 1842. You had even talked about rehearsing in advance what you were going to say in responding in some of these situations. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that is. The morning when I checked my phone to see that he had officially won, you know, I have a bit of a commute, and I just programmed it inside of myself so that way I wouldn't be caught off guard and it didn't look like I was searching. Like, it was just automatic. So, you know, in all kinds of ways, like, I mean, what do you think? Or even, like, in my mind, I played it in so many different ways with each person that would potentially do it that could make me feel uncomfortable. And I said, I just don't discuss politics at work. And I won't lie, the first couple of times, you know, it's like it's not as solidified because I hadn't done it. But I did it so much that day, I'm good now.
That's generally all it takes. It's been my experience is once you get, you know, a few runs, particularly if you can take a few practice attempts by yourself kind of in the car, or if you have a partner or whatever, or if you, you know, round friends, siblings, whatever, you can just try it a few times, get them to ask a few questions, you know, in the morning as you have a few slices of fruit or whatever for breakfast. And just do the same thing. What do you think about that, Trump? You can just try it a few times. If you stay by yourself, you can just use your mirror and just try it a few times. Whatever your line is or whatever you want to say, just say it so you can get accustomed. You can hear yourself saying it, how you want to say it, so you don't sound aggressive, so that you just sound neutral, calm. This, you know, just isn't a conversation for me right now. But, you know, hey, we will definitely stay in communication later on. I'm just not going to participate in this one right now. Real important. Other folks that we have not heard from, if you dialed in, if you have a hand up, feel free to chime in.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hey, man, how you doing, girl? Hey, listen, well, check this out. This is my world play, right? So now, I've been up here in North Dakota, man, for a little, for probably about a year and a half, right? So, and I've been going through a lot of jobs as a convict. Now, it's a lot of work up here. So, I've been bouncing around. I took on another job probably about 3 months ago at a Radisson Hotel in a restaurant. And we were washing dishes, you know. The other night, it's a little white boy. It's a little young crappy in there, right? So he came. Something was going on, so I told him, I said, thank you, sir. He's 16. I'm 36. Right? And this is a little baby white boy, right? So I told him, I said, thank you, sir. You know, and you know what the crappy said? He said, you welcome, ma'am. He called me a ma'am. You know what I mean? Now, I mean, you know, but and he a kid. He a little kid. So, you know, but it was like, that's what went on the other day with me, man. But, and a question that I want to ask, of course, to the to workplace, for anybody, man, you know, and I'm gonna mute my line, because I noticed that myself coming up here, being able to work, white people giving jobs, and you can work, because we can work, and then it's like, and I find myself being happy getting a second job, right? So, but then when I'm looking that up, so I'm wondering, is it a way that when, if ever when we can bring a new way of living to everybody and working and things, right? Do you think that it's possible? Do you think that it, okay, do you think that it's possible for us to be able to with money and labor as far as working, paycheck, the system that we under right now, where black people can still be innovative and creative and still, you know, like learn different things and different careers and bring forth new, you know, advanced higher technology without this system of just work. Because it seems like everything is just work. And I'm going to mute my line.
My response to your question would be that the system of white supremacy, I think anyone, if you have Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., if you have his code book, and I think it's even in the Word Guide, when he talks about economics, he talks about the use of time and energy, where you said, you know, black people, for us to be able to be creative and use our intelligence and brilliance to come up with things, whatever it is, business opportunities or whatever other ideas, the system of white supremacy dominates and it controls the way that non-white people use our time and energy. I know Mr. Edward Williams at counterracism.com, he said some years back that he got scientific about it and he looked at each 24-hour period he's given on a daily basis and he looked at how he allocated his time. And he said he tried to get to the point where he was at least using the hours where he wasn't asleep, where he was using the majority of his non-sleeping hours for counter-racist purposes. And he said he was never able to get the equation to that point, that it would end up being invariably that he would end up spending more time on his job or whatever else, things that directly or indirectly help support the system of white supremacy. That's just the power dynamic. So I don't think, I could be in error, I don't think we're going to change that until we end white supremacy. But I do think that that's something that's important. And I think in the meantime, that's why I consistently encourage for us to really appreciate, really value our time and energy. Even as we assess the importance of listening to this program, our time is valuable. It can't be replaced. And we have a lot of problems. So we should really, really value the way we allocate our time and energy. The other folks who dialed in that we have not heard from, if you have commentary, questions, problems, strategies, feel free, chime in.
Greetings, Nancy.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I took some notes. First, I have to talk about the clip that you played initially with the Dark Santa. It immediately reminded me of a workplace racism situation where a coworker, and this person was a non-white person, she was Filipino, but she had taken her child to see Santa Claus at the BX on base. And when she came to work on Monday, she was very disappointed because Santa was not white, and she wasn't even a white person. So that was very confusing to me at that time. And somebody else told me about a situation that happened today about the Donald Trump situation. A friend, I had lunch with a friend, and she told me that she went to Sam's Club today, and you know how they have to check your receipt on the way out, and she saw the employee talking to the people leaving out, and she saw the lady leaning away, and she didn't know what happened. And so the employee, Sam's Club employee, walked away, and the white lady that was in front of her, and this is a non-white person telling me this, said, that lady just told me that we won. You know, like, she's referring to the election, but she's assuming that this white woman that she's telling this to is on the same team as her. Like, yeah, we won. And I thought that was interesting as well. As far as workplace racism, I listened to in a situation, a program in the archives. Well, I'll save that for later. You know, I think my time is up. I'll talk later if nobody else wants to. You know. I'll mute my line.
All right. She says she'll share later. Kamisha M. Africa in the archives. She's been a guest on the program, a generous investor. She's called in numerous times down through the years. She said she will give us the update on the previous situation that she shared before as we roll. I do know with that Christmas thing that non-white people worldwide, we have been tremendously abused, victimized, contaminated with racist concepts and how we think, speak, act, even the way that we, our emotions as well. So unfortunate, part of the process, hopefully, purging some of that contamination. Other folks that dialed in that we haven't heard from, if you had commentary dealing with workplace racism, feel free. You're a little low. If you could speak up, please.
Can you hear me now, guys?
That's a little better.
Oh, yes. Thank you, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I had a few observations from the week. First was there was two, I guess you can say that they're metaphors or you know, when white supremacists use words, they can, I guess, take objects or something to, I guess, symbolize racism. Like the first was, I think there was, people were saying a whole bunch of these, I guess you call them sayings or metaphors. And one female said, like, they was conversing in a break room. And this new white female, she was saying, oh, well, have you ever heard of not the brightest crayon in the box? So, you know, I asked the question. So I said, crayons in a box. So when it comes to intelligence, you use the brightest color in the box to show how much intelligence you have. And she just kind of gave me a blank stare, you know, like, you know, I wonder why you would ask me that. And then I said, what would be the brightest crayon in the box? And she said, oh, that'd be the white crayon. So and I said, what would be the darkest crayon in the box? And she said, oh, that would be black. And, you know, from then and there, you know, the questions just kind of, well, I didn't really ask too many more questions because I think I had made my point. And then the other guy came in, you know, trying to say, well, you know, it's all about something else and getting into religion. So that, like, later on that day for the second interaction, you know, he was relocating his desk because the black male is going to be taking over his supervisor position. So that's definitely a plus I like to add, because it was announced in the meeting that he would be taking over in the traffic area. But yet for the last 2 years, he was training this guy, which, you know, he didn't know nothing about the area, to make him a supervisor of two departments. But back to the one on symbolism, there's this, if anybody's seen what a domino piece looks like, the game called Dominoes, like it's like a black piece, or like a small black item. So, you know, I asked him a question. I was like, I've never seen that before. You know, why you have that sitting now on your desk? You know, because we talk about trinkets and stuff. And he said, oh, well, you know, this represents, because it looked like it was a domino to me. You know? And it was a small black item with three dots making a diagonal line. And he said, yeah, you know, the light spots represent the light and the corruption of darkness. And I said, what, this looks like something that came from some kind of game board or something. He said, oh, no, you know, it's the light showing through the evil wickedness, all these kind of, negative or bad terms to align with, you know, the color of black. So it was very interesting that he had that sitting on his desk. The next observation was we were, like, when it came to the Donald Trump president-elect the other day, like, it was a lot of people that looked like they were upset. And this the same guy, he said he would take people to the voting polls that was voting for Trump. And I said, you want to take nobody else that's voting for somebody else? And then he says, you know, maybe I would. And then again, I probably wouldn't. But, you know, they can vote for whoever they like. And, you know, Hillary Clinton, she's just a disgrace. And I heard a lot of white women saying this. I want to add that in, of all age brackets, saying that I do not think she should be the president, and being very emphatic about it. You know, so it was that was an interesting observation. And there was another thing that I had where, like, they was talking about this again today, and they was talking about when he mentioned about, you know, grabbing the genitalia of females in that comment. So the same guy, he said, well, you know, you women now, you say a lot of things behind the scenes as well. You say a lot of things behind closed doors or in private. And you say things that you wouldn't have said in public as well. And then, you know, he asked me something about, well, what do you think black people or the black Trump supporters get called by other black people? So I was saying, I don't know. What do you think they get called? So he was saying they'll be getting called, you know, Uncle Tom and all kind of things. And then he mentioned Strom Thurmond, you know. I'm like, where did that name come from? So I guess he was comparing the two of them for some reason. And he was saying, well, you know, he stayed in office for a very long time, and he told them, like a John Wayne quote, he says, never apologize because it makes you look weak. So I'm like, well, make you look weak to who? And, like, how does that make you weak? And, like, he wouldn't answer too many of the questions. He was basically defending Trump. So, and the other white women were kind of having a disagreement with him. And, you know, I just stayed in the question lane. And that was all of my observations this week. Thank you.
Always grand to stay in the question lane. Certainly, folks are encouraged. If you have questions about any of the scenarios that are brought up as we're moving along, if you have questions or if you have strategies on a way that you think would be constructive in dealing with that sort of thing, feel free, chime in. The number, again, to dial is 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Certainly, you can email untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. If you are not able to speak for whatever reason, if you're in a loud environment or, you know, whatever the case is, you can email and I will share your commentary anonymously. And that way people, if, you know, if you want to get feedback on something specifically or what have you, we can do it that way as well. Other folks have commentary? Oh, wait a minute. Before I even get to that, our caller in Florida with, I thought the expression, now I am a victim of racism, so, you know, I could be retarded, whatever the case, but I thought the expression was not the sharpest crown in the box. I had never heard that one before. Like, I thought it was, you know, the sharpest knife in the drawer, the sharpest tool, or the sharpest crown. I had not heard the brightest crown, because you're generally not using crowns for brightness per se. You want it to be nice and sharp so you can make your drawings and what have you. I think it might even seem like she may have mangled the metaphor, but that, unless I'm mistaken, that's one. And then I also thought it was important just asking questions, because this is what she said. So what are you saying? And then just asking, well, what's the brightest crown in the box? The white one, since we're talking about intelligence and brightness. And then what's the darkest crown? The black one, where somehow it just always works out that way, that black people are dumb and ignorant and white people are super smart. And we find words directly, indirectly of conveying that all the time. But I thought it was sharpest crown in the box, not brightest.
Yeah, you know what? That's a very good point. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, and I was like, "Isn't it supposed to be something like the sharpest?" And then she was saying, "Like not the brightest." You know, I was like, "I don't know. Maybe she did try to edit it or something." And she was pretty much just going on what she was saying. So I had asked them a few questions, and you know, the other white guy, it was three people in the room at the time, you know, myself included. And he was saying, you know, like similar things about being bright, you know, and being intelligent. So, you know, I think about how they come up with those terms like dim-witted and all of that. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. And that's pretty much what happened with that interaction. I can't really remember anything outside of that part.
Yeah, I would just stay alert for those type of things. And that's one, if you want, you know, the practice, anyone listening, if you want practice of taking down notes of things that people say on the job, that sort of thing, particularly if they're willing to answer questions and not be too defensive, might be one where you can jot down notes, or if you got your recorder, you record that segment, save it, keep it pushing. You can just add that to your file for things if you want to address racism as an issue down the road or not. Even if you might not even be worth your time, you can just acknowledge that it was said and continue moving. But I do think it's important just recognizing how white supremacy, racism, it is literally, it is happening all the time, being reinforced all the time, being practiced all the time, and in my opinion, white people are not ignorant about that sort of thing, in my view. Other folks that we have not heard from, any callers that we have?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to you, Gus. Excuse me, to all the callers and listeners. This is Ross. Wow. I want to say first, the conversation you had with Dr. Rasayan was phenomenal. I was kind of sad that I missed it. I wasn't up as late as I would have and could have been to actually hear it live and contribute. But I just want to say it was a phenomenal show, and I thank you for what you do. A couple of really interesting observations. I had off from work yesterday. I had to go to a dentist appointment, and I'm actually ecstatic that I had yesterday off, because when I walked into the building today, it's in the big building with security at the bottom floor, and you have to pass security to get to the elevator. And there's black male security guards. We've had numerous conversations, just positive young black males, and they have a decent understanding of the system of white supremacy. We've talked about some things on occasion before. So when I walked in today, the black male just gave me dap, and we talked for a minute, and he asked me how I was doing. I said, "Oh, I'm good. You know, I was bright and cheery." He said, "Oh, okay." He said, "You lucky you weren't here yesterday," because I told him I had off because he didn't see me. So he said people were coming in literally in tears. He just said you would have thought like the world was coming to an end with all the white people you saw coming in there, you know, crying and upset, and everybody needed consoling. And it was just this big to-do about Trump winning the presidency. And I said, wow. I said it's very interesting. And he said he'd even seen some black people come to work very upset and look really, really uncomfortable with the results of the selection. I don't call it an election. I call it a selection because that's what it really is. And, you know, I said, it's really sad because we've been dealing with this for at least 500 years and nothing's really going to change with Trump in office, just like nothing would have changed with Hillary in office, except that I think she would have started World War III. So I said, in all honesty, you know, I said, we've been suffering so long that really no matter who's in office, we're going to continue to suffer. So I said, for me, it doesn't mean anything. And I felt like, as far as I was concerned, it didn't take long after listening to Dr. Welsing's treatise on Donald Trump becoming the new president for me to get on board. And I've been stuck with that ever since, like, earlier in the year. As far as just my perception of him as a candidate. So I said, yeah, you know, it's not a big deal. No problem. So talked a little bit more, and then I go upstairs. So when I go upstairs, I log into my computer, and I see this email, and I'm going to read the email. It says, hi, team. I wanted to take this time to let you know this is a female, white female terrorist who is the manager of our department, and she's actually the person who's been terrorizing another black female on the job that I've been trying to assist with dealing with that. So this is what this white creature writes. I wanted to take this time to let you know that I'm thinking of you. I know today may be difficult for you and our members, personally, both personally and emotionally and work-wise as well. Please know that we appreciate all you do. Thank you for taking care of members in good times and with difficult ones. Thank you, leads and senior reps, for supporting your teams. You are the voice at company name. You hear what they are happy, sad, and worried about. Keep providing the excellent service that you give, and know myself, your leads and peers, and leadership are here for you. One company name. Thank you for all that you do. And I was like, wow. I said, I had other coworkers, a couple of the non-white black coworkers, kind of swarm towards me when they saw me, because some of them were really in shock. And I just, you know, I kept it simple. I said, listen, I'm fine. I said, I expected this, and it doesn't really mean anything to me, and I'm not going to get into this any further than that anyway. But it's just interesting because I've ended up bypassing another letter that I didn't know was there that was right off the elevator. When you get off the elevator, I didn't actually notice it. And one of my coworkers said, well, you know, did you see the email by the elevator? I said, no. So she said, well, when you get your first opportunity, please go check this email. So I said, okay, let me go and see what she's talking about. And when I did, this one was even more mind-blowing than the other one. And this is a white coworker who wrote this. He says, hi, this is a politics email. Trump is president. Because of him and the machine which begat him, hundreds of thousands of people are going to die. Millions more are going to suffer. It is a moral imperative to me to show solidarity and support for those who will be victimized in the days and years ahead. Here are some suggestions. Please consider getting involved in local politics and regional campaigns. Whatever your political orientation, we need to build a stronger resistance to the forces which empower Trump. One that has the momentum to affect real change in our communities and our nation. Consider signing up or donating to the Democratic Socialists of America, who are working tirelessly to protect and preserve civil liberties while building a broad left coalition. And he puts in brackets, plus their barbecues are pretty fun. That's number one. Number two, if that isn't your thing, which is fine, please consider donating to organizations that will sorely need the support. Here are some. One called NARAL, N-A-R-A-L, Pro-Choice America. The second one was National Immigrant Forum. The next one is CARA, Pro Bono Project. The next one is National Network of Abortion Funds. The next one is Muslim Center of New York. The next one is Southern Poverty Law Center. The next one is ACLU Nationwide. The next one is Planned Parenthood Federation of America. And the last one is Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. If you make a donation to one of these organizations or any other organization you deem important to you and your community who aids those in pain, Trump will exacerbate in the next 4 years. I will make you a personalized thank you card with thick construction paper. The good stuff. Your friend, Tim. And I sat here and I'm like going through the list of organizations, all of these Planned Parenthood, which is killing black children wholesale, Pro-Choice America, killing black children wholesale, all of these different abortion organizations. And I'm sitting here like, wait a minute. You know, you work for a man who is literally the brother-in-law of Donald Trump. His family owns the building that we work in, and he owns a bunch of buildings throughout New York City. And he's in very, very close to Donald Trump. And you're literally posting this email on, you know, on company property, explaining how you're so against Donald Trump when the people who own your company and pay your paycheck are basically his brother-in-law, essentially. And I'm like, okay, this is very interesting. And I sat there and I thought about how many black people would be fooled into thinking that because of these emails being sent around by these creatures, that there's a such thing as good white people, that our job really cares about the fact that Donald Trump is in office and all the other rhetorical ethics that they tend to practice on a regular basis on this job. And I was just sat there and I really, really, I would say, sad, because I know that there's a lot of people, black people on that job, that are confused, that would literally gravitate towards these emails and some of the discussions, because I stayed as far away from those discussions, especially with white people, as possible. And they're going to believe that this company has their best interest. And the other thing that threw me off, too, because now that the Affordable Care Act is in question, because Donald Trump wants to eradicate that, essentially, our company might be in jeopardy, because they're fully invested in the Affordable Care Act. So there's a lot of people stressing out about that, but I'm getting things to prepare to make my way up out of there soon enough anyway. But there's just so much undercurrent, I would say just an undercurrent of rhetorical ethics that white people have been and will continue to play up in a way that will be very dangerous for those black people who don't understand how the system works. And I just find those two emails that were generated in the company to be telling examples of the types of nonsense that white people will be pulling on us. Thank you, and I will mute my line.
Wow. Appreciate that, Roz. I'm glad I missed out on all of that. I would not be too enthused about black people crying because Trump won, and certainly if there are any whites who are going to be crying because Trump won, that, oh my, great day to have a sick day or time off available to be out of the building. Other folks that we have not heard from, if you had commentary.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. How's it going, everybody? This is Zora from Dallas. I haven't been on in a while, and I'm glad to be back on. I had to call in for this occasion. I would like to say that as far as my day at work after the election, it was kind of actually the opposite from Brother Roz. You know, nobody really batted an eye, and, you know, the white supremacists, I'm not even going to say suspected, but the white supremacists, you know, they walked around with their chest out. And the funny thing about it was, I actually loved it, because I like to see who I can deal with and who I can't deal with. Non-white black female, you know, she approached me, and she came into my office, and we closed the door, and we just laughed, because we actually found it funny that, you know, that they seem very emboldened, which is fine. I wanted to say a lot. I'm actually kind of surprised that they let them post the email up in the hallway. I guess it was next to the elevators or some, you know, place like that. But it was actually very interesting. No, like I said, nobody cried. Nobody, you know, really shed a tear. I did want to say, you know, it's, when white people don't think you're listening, I had a situation, this was Monday, and I actually recorded it, and I was going to send it to Roz and Thomas from New York, but I was in the locker room, and I was actually, you know, getting done, you know, from working out, changing and stuff like that, you know, and so this white guy walks in, and he's just going off on Hillary, and he's just talking, you know, bigging up Trump, and this is the day before the actual election. And so, you know, I get done, and let me let you know, too, also they have Fox News on the TV in the locker room. I work in a very, very conservative, you know, corporate building. So, but I'm getting dressed and everything like that, and I get done, and I walk from around the corner, and the guy looks at me, and he has this, like, his face just, you know, gets a little bit paler than what it already is. And he couldn't believe that I was actually over there. I just looked at him, smiled, and walked out. So, you know, they're just getting very bold, and, you know, we just get to know who we, you know, don't have to be, or who we don't need to deal with. Let me say that. And I'm eating my lunch.
Can we hear?
Yes, sir.
Can we hear her?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Thanks, guys. Greetings to all the callers. Let's see. Today's Thursday, so the election was over yesterday, and so. This is a gentleman from Virginia. I'm in the mortgage business, and we had a conference call yesterday, and the gentleman that hired me told a racist joke, probably forgetting that I was on. I don't even think he forgot. And the joke was somebody had said, we have a mortgage program that you have to have a certain kind of visa. I think it's like an H-1 visa in order to get the program done. And somebody said, hey, Jerry, he said, yeah, he said, remember that H-1 visa program? And he was like, yeah, he said, well, after yesterday, that's no longer going to be necessary. And the whole line started laughing. And literally, I'm sitting there thinking, this is interesting. Like, this is interesting. And the fact that there's a conference call with about, you know, 100 people on it, and I think I'm the only African-American loan officer in the company. That just kind of tells you everything. And I believe that there are a couple people that are classified as that. And I think I mentioned this before on a mortgage application. If you look at the bottom on the back half where we do what's called the declarations and you have the racial categories, there is a Hispanic and there is a white Hispanic and a non-white Hispanic. And many of the people in this company, they identify themselves as what we call white Hispanics. So just keep that in mind. Then that same gentleman that told that joke came to my office today. I've learned to be extremely more codified, and I just say yes, no. And I'm very pleasant, you know. I'm easy to work with, but I suspect everybody. I had to help a older white female today. She didn't know much about the system and how we do loans, and I had to show her how to do that, and I was pleasant, extremely codified. But I could feel there was a sense of relief within them and just smiling. And you could just tell that the aura was there. And then one other observation is I left work and I went to pick up my son from school. And one of the schools that he goes to after school for daycare, it's probably the worst performing school in the county. So the majority, unfortunately, of non-white kids. And I remember something that Dr. Rossian had said, and everybody's been saying, but Gus had said yesterday about the white females and the percentage that voted for Trump. And then you realize, you know, standing at the bus stop looking at our babies, and everybody that's teaching them are these white females. And so those are the people that voted. These are the people teaching our children. These are the people mistreating our children. So, you know, when we're at work, you know, our kids are continuously terrorized. And that's all I got. Thanks, everybody.
Point well taken. I wanted to just ask really quick before other folks were going to share. Were you the same caller that dialed in maybe 2 weeks ago and talking about how learning about racism, white supremacy, you attempt to apply it in your work to help black people with finances, since that seems to be your field? Was that you, sir, or am I mixed up?
No, that's me. That's correct, guys.
Oh, okay. Right on. I don't know if you're interested. You might have already too much taxing your time. There was a listener who just wanted to know if maybe they could email you just to ask a couple questions.
She emailed me, and I told her to call me. She never called me.
Oh, okay.
She's still out there. I was waiting for a call. So, yeah, right. Come on with it. I gave her my phone number, too, so she's good to go, man.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Much obliged. Really appreciate that, sir. Listener, get on the ball. Make that phone call. Other folks that We have not heard from A-plus on the racist joke, too. That's another one where if you had your recording device, bam, just have that recorded and stash that one away down the road. Other folks that if you dialed in, if we have not heard from you, if you have commentary, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, hi. Thanks. Let me just make sure. Okay, so this is the thing. I've heard Dr. Wolfing say in the past, if the white community feels threatened, then part of the way they deal with that threat is to assuage or deal with this need to kill. You know, it's almost as if basically the need to kill, the need to kill black people or to exterminate color can make them feel better. And it goes up, that need goes up if they feel threatened. One of the things I was thinking about is that, is the system threatened? You know, because she talks about the system, she mentions the system, and the system has been in place, say, like 500 years. So, you know, all systems come to an end, right? And we've heard about the financial system having trouble there, and, you know, some people just feel like economically things are just not about to fall apart. And we're just, you know, it's all a joke, and all everything's coming out, and it's a fall of morality, and blah, 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 whatever you want to put it. But I was just thinking, like, is the system really threatened? And if the system is really threatened, then maybe the election of Trump has even greater significance from a global perspective. As if to say, maybe white people are communicating to us that either they're at a point where their genetic survivability is pretty low. We have these Ancestry.com things, send in your DNA, blah, 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 blah. Maybe they can't be really viable anymore genetically. Or maybe the system that they created to support their genetic inadequacy is no longer able to do so.
Okay. I appreciate the comment.
Sorry, yeah, I'm rambling.
Racism. Workplace racism. Do you have commentary on that?
No, I do not. I apologize. But hey, sure, that's also important. Take care. Thank you.
No apologies needed. And just dial in on Saturday for the compensatory call-in. Then whatever views you would like to discuss, I'm sure the election will be a big topic. If you want to pose your question about if this is what this represents, if this is whites or communicating something about their own fragility in this system. Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and share your view and other folks can give you some feedback. We have other folks who had commentary, workplace racism. I know Kamisha M. Africa, she said she had additional commentary later. But anybody we haven't heard from who wanted to share?
Hello, can I be here?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, how are you doing, Gus? This is Triumph, long time no hear.
Greetings.
I listened to this show a couple days in a row with the whole fiasco that's going on, and it's been interesting. I called in just because I wanted to give my testimony because I am in business for myself, and I would like to encourage black people to go into business for themselves and to start where you're at. You can start very small. It does not have to be, you know, it's very intimidating. The thought of being in business for yourself and providing money on your own without having a consistent paycheck, it's very scary. It's intimidating. I went through a lot with it. I went through a lot with myself on my journey, but I just want to encourage people. I quit my corporate job. It's been 2.5 years. So I was working for a greeting card company. As you know, I'm a designer, and I quit 2.5 years ago, and I left myself on a roster with a headhunting company that, you know, so I'm going to tell you what emboldened me to do that, but I left myself on a headhunter website to where if times got bad and I couldn't support myself, I could still do contract work. But where I started and what the business that I'm in has absolutely nothing to do with my college degree. I went to a private art school 4 years. I have a $100,000 education, and the business that I'm in is not concerned with that at all. And, you know, that caused anxiety at first too, but we've been, you know, we've been deceived and we've been lied to, and so usurped and integrated into the system. I mean, it's a lot of mental detachment that I had to do. So let me. So how I got to this point is that my partner at the time, which is now my wife, she said, "Well, my cousin, he's on Craigslist. She's from New Jersey, so her cousin was in New Jersey on Craigslist. Craigslist has a free side, and he would go on the Craigslist on the free side, and he would find things that he felt like were of value." And he would go get them and then put them back on Craigslist and sell them for the money. That's what he was doing in New Jersey. So I said, you know what? That's an interesting idea. Maybe we should give it a go. And we tried to do that. It didn't work. So one day with that same idea in mind, we were in a Goodwill, and I saw a sectional sofa. And the sectional sofa was on sale at the Goodwill for $60. It was in decent condition, whatever, what have you. And so I purchased the sectional sofa. I forget how I transported it, but I put it up on Craigslist, and it sold in less than 24 hours for $360. I never forget that because that was my first sale. I didn't even have this sofa for a day. And that one situation or that one time generating money with nobody else really involved except for me, it was all my profit, it emboldened me to endeavor even further. So this is something that we began to do, Craigslist to Craigslist. I would get on Craigslist, I would look for cheap furniture, I would go get it, and I would put it right back up on Craigslist for a profit. And through that small, you know, I probably did that for about 2 years. Until I got to the point where I said, you know, I had prayed consistently, please free me from having to work for these white people. I mean, I was to the point at my job where the highs, the finessings, the smile, all of that was gone. I was at work like, yo, everybody knew, don't talk to her, don't talk to me, I'm not talking to you, I don't eat your food, don't invite me, don't ask me. Like, it was known, but I did my job, you know, quietly, so, you know, I think they put up with me, but I was just like, yo, this has to end. I do not want to deal with these people. And so through that, those small transactions and building that up over a couple of years, it took courage, it took encouragement from my partner, it took a lot to just say, you know what, I don't have to do this. You know, I'm tried and tested within these last 2 years to where I can generate income on my own. And I just stepped out on faith and I said, yo, I put in my letter of resignation, like I'm out. And you know, the white people are like, oh, they can't believe it. What are you going to do? You know, I'm like, yo, I'm just out. I'm not going to give you any information, but you know, it was a whole shockwave through the building because they're like, oh, like, you know, kind of, how dare you? You know what I mean? So it that was crazy, but it was liberating. And so once I quit my job, I probably was free of corporate, free of everything for about 6 months. I got offered a contract with Cox Communications, and they were paying more money than my other corporate job ever paid me. I'm like, yeah, I could do that. So I went on to the job as a contractor. They hired me permanently. They bought out my contract. I'm like, wow, you know. But at the same time, because I'm generating income on my own, on the side as well, my posture in the building was completely, you know, I'm sure they thought that I was an uppity Negro. Not because I was being uppity, but because of the confidence and the lack of anxiety that I display in their presence because I don't need you. You understand? So how I was released from that job, it was a 20-year veteran that they constantly had me help, another designer. And she would always get me to help her, and she wouldn't give me any art direction until the end. After I done worked for 8 hours, she wants to come back and say, oh, I wanted to see this, I wanted to see that. And she got me a couple times to where I'm, like, sucking it up, and I'm like, okay. So one time she did it, and I said, yeah, no. I wrote an email to my boss, and I copied her on the email telling my boss my issue. And I just explained, you know, it would help me maximize my time if you could give me art direction in the beginning. I was very politically correct and, you know what I mean, straightforward. A week later, boom, cancel my contract. And I said, you know what? Yeah, I'm never going back. I'm never doing that again. But it's forced me into a position to where now I have a corporation. Now I have companies that I'm working with. Now I have people that I employ to help me with my business. It's put me in a complete different mind frame. Now that I've generated a little more income and I have more time on my hands, I can look into other investments and other things to do. I can work on my music and other things to make myself more constructive. It's just, you know, I just want to give that testimony because we can really start where we are. And they have so many things. Amazon is a huge, I mean, people are killing it on Amazon with very little startup money. It's just so many things going on right now where we can start generating money on our own so that we do not have to go through this ridiculous circus on these jobs, putting up with these people, stressing us out, cutting down our lifespan. I wanted to give that testimony.
Has been, and definitely appreciate that triumph, has racism been an issue in any way in your private business affairs? Has it been a problem there in any way?
It absolutely rears its head, and I'll tell you how. I'm selling goods primarily on Craigslist and other applications or apps like OfferUp and 5 Mile, things like that, like local classified listing. So I get all types of people, Indians, Africans, white people, all types of people. So the white people, I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but the white people, when they come, it's mixed. I've had white people pull up because I'm selling high-end furniture now. So when they pull up and I jump out or Arlene jumps out, you can just see, like, you see the whole entire demeanor. You see their whole, like, they're shocked and they're dismayed and they're disgusted and they're just like, I've literally had them like, I would like to purchase this. Like, so who do I give the money to? And I look at them like, who's here? Like, I'm the only person here. I'm the only person you've spoken with, corresponded with. I'm like, yeah, you give the money to me. And sometimes it's a whole issue. Like, sometimes their attitude completely changes, and because of who I am, they don't want it. Like, even though they were excited about it, really serious about coming to see whatever it is they want, when they get there, they don't even really want to look at it or inspect it. It's like, you know, you saw me, and now you turned off, and, you know, they keep it moving. Then you have some who are just, you know, they're really afraid. They're not comfortable. They don't want to leave a deposit. They, you know, the not leaving a deposit is huge because I require for you to leave a deposit if you don't want me to sell it. If you want me to take my goods off the line, you have to leave something so for me to do that. And they're very much uncomfortable, but I love it because they're my goods and I have control, so I can totally sell something from under you. They're like, no, it's okay. I'm not going to leave a deposit. I'm just going to come pick it up on Friday. I make sure it's gone by Friday. And I don't tell them, I don't call them or nothing. And I let them come all the way there and show up like, oh, yeah, that's sold. But that's the power that you have when you are in business for yourself. So racism rears itself in that manner, but I'm not as affected in a business sense because I have complete and total control over my goods. The person that I'm dealing with, who my contract is through, where I currently get my goods from, is another black person. Like, so don't get me wrong, through the whole, my whole situation is blessed for sure. But, you know, when I have interactions with white people, it is completely on my terms. I can discriminate. Sometimes they show up and they snotty and snooty and they get out and they Benzes and they Mercedes with their sunglasses. And I'm like, yeah, nah. You know what I mean? I'm selective with, like, I'm not selling to you. I'm discriminating against you just because your whole aura, like, you're a racist. Like, you are a race soldier. You pulled up like a race soldier. I have goods that you want, and I'm not selling it to you. No. Bam. I've done that, too. So, I mean, that's, and I'm in Atlanta, so, I'm a little jaded right now because I come in contact with very few white. It's like the only white people that I have to come in contact with are the white people that I'm doing business with. You know, I'm no longer in the offices. This is Atlanta. There's no white people that works in the Publix around the corner, the grocery store, you know, the different places where I do go. Unless I'm doing business, unless I'm at an auction or something like that, that's the only time I even really come in contact with white people. And it's on my terms. That's why I want black people. We have to go into business for ourselves. And once we're in business for ourselves, we have to reach out to other businesses and basically make a chain or make a pact with one another to begin to build with one another. Because right now, what I'm looking to do, I'm looking for other businesses because I do, so I have the furniture, I do graphic design, I do photography. The music production is a side piece, but I'm trying to take my skills and my business. I want to link up with other businesses, and we make a pact to do business with one another. We make a pact to send business each other's way. We make a pact that when you need photography, when you need graphic design, when you need furniture, you come to me, and I make a pact with you. When I need your service and I need your goods, if somebody comes in my business and they need your service, you are going to get that business. And if we make a link and we make a chain like that, as businesses, then when we begin to profit and we begin to prosper, we can then come together collectively and take our profits, put them together collectively, and then do something else. But this is group economics, and it's what has to happen. It is the only way. So that's all I have.
Right on. Be great if seems like you already have done some of the, I guess, networking with other black entrepreneurs where you all are making this pack. You know, if people come to me and they have services that I know you offer, then bam, you already know I'm going to send it that way. If you can kind of, I just want to say, document the process, that would kind of be good. That way it would be kind of something, I guess, where you could kind of share the steps if other people kind of want to know the process of you know, mm-hmm. the starting out. This is how much money that we have to start out with and going through that. And then once you kind of get established a little bit and reaching out and working with other people, if you can kind of, I guess, write it up so more people can kind of follow since you said it's been such a liberating experience for you and you can better deal with racism in terms of what you're doing when you are running your own business, write it up or have it a way that some other people can easily grasp and duplicate what you've been able to do.
Yes, that is awesome. Right now, I'm just to the point, and really the this whole Trump election and having to deal with how sad that people very, very close to me are, you know, has really, because I didn't, you know, I could totally foresee a Donald Trump. You know, I don't get involved in the whole political thing. I understand my position and our position in it. But for the people who were engaged and who are invested in elections and things like that, like to have to deal with family members and, you know, black people that I love and care about who are devastated and heartbroken, I mean, and visually depressed behind this particular election is what has lit a fire in me to where I have this idea, but now I'm very, very serious about it. I'm trying to brainstorm ideas on how to organize that and to give incentives to the other businesses that I would like to approach to make this all work. So the election definitely inspired that within me, you know, inspired me to get a little more busy, inspired me to pay closer attention to where I am spending my money, how I'm spending my money, and optimizing my time. I have much more time on my hands, and I squander a lot of it. So it's just motivated me to really get busy and get to work. So hopefully, you know, that's where a lot of us are mentally after the whole election thing. And the further that I get along in that process, I will absolutely update you and try to come up with something cohesive, maybe, you know, like a blueprint, you know, to doing it. If I can, I will. You know what I mean?
Spectacular. Spectacular. Yeah. Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. Yeah, definitely. Keep us updated. I say that. I put that in every week. Black people that are entrepreneurs, what your experience is, how you experience it. I have maintained that you're not going to eliminate the racism aspect entirely. It's just going to change how you deal with it. But that might be a benefit for some folks. It might be a substantial improvement over, you know, the alternative. See if we have other folks that we have not heard from, anybody else that we have not heard from. Appreciate hearing from Triumph again. Been a while since she dialed in. Anybody that we missed? Any call? Do we get everybody, or have we missed anyone completely?
Greetings. This is Kamisha in Africa again. First, I want to co-sign on everything Triumph said. I have to tell my story now that she told her story, right? So, that program that you and I did, Gus, on March 4th, 2014, so much has happened since then. Like, when I listened to it, I was very aloof on that program because by that time, I had already resigned from the Department of Defense, and I'm not sure why I didn't share that on that broadcast. Like, I could have helped a lot of people by saying you could do it, but I think I didn't do it because I was very nervous about my situation at the time and how this whole thing was going to play out. I submitted my paperwork on my birthday. I didn't know how my life was going to turn out, but I knew I had to leave. I had to get up out of there, you know? And so I quit. I quit a good job, you know what I'm saying? And everybody was looking at me crazy, and those white folks, they begged me to stay, but I couldn't stay because I knew they were trying to fire me. And on that with the drug testing, everything that was going on with the blackmail that I hired, they were and I'm not sure why I didn't include this in that program as well. On that program, I told you everything that happened about the black male, but all that happened after I had resigned, and I gave them 2 months' notice. This happened in the last 3 weeks of my employment on that island of Okinawa. Like, but I didn't tell nobody I was quitting. I did it on my birthday. The only person I told was the female I was living with at the time, and we made a pact. Don't tell nobody. This is what's going down. She said, we about to bounce. We about to get out of here because we see the writing on the wall. And that's how it went down. Nobody knew except for when I did it. And then, yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Huh.
And with the story I wanted to share was about, I listened to something in the archives about voodoo, and it comes full circle with Dr. Welding's prediction, because on my last job, and looking back on it, reflecting back on it, I know it had a negative impact in the workplace because I was the supervisor. So, but people weren't listening to me, and I had a crystal ball to help. But I used to always say, the crystal ball don't lie, the crystal ball don't, but that's just it was a saying at the time. Kamisha is not sitting at home staring at no crystal ball. You know what I'm saying? Because I had tried it and it didn't work. But people believed me when I said it, so I brought it to work one day. And it spooked everybody out so bad, you know? Like a colleague of mine, he was the maintenance chief, I'm the housing manager. He's married to a white female. And I took it to work on a Friday because I wanted it to sink in. Like, y'all better listen to me. But he's married to a white female, and we talk about racism, white supremacy all the time. So he, you know, blah, blah, blah. Blase to the squad. He'll talk about it with me, but he's married to a white woman. And I used to ask him a million questions about that one. But he ended up like that following Monday, coming back to me and asking me, did I give his wife an ear infection? I could not believe that. Like, he really think I'm, I said, bruh, I'm not sitting at home thinking about your white wife, and you know that. Why would you even ask me anything? But that's because I played too hard and took the crystal ball to work. Like, every, and then the black male that I hired that was so aggressive, he was aggressive before, but he doubled it up. Like, he said I was worshiping the devil, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, whoa, I took it too far, you know what I'm saying? I shouldn't have actually showed them I have a real crystal ball that's collecting dust inside my house. I don't even use it. Okay. I'm going to pause right there. And then I've been telling people the whole time, ever since Dr. Weldon said it, I've been riding with that Donald Trump going to win. Because Dr. Weldon is one of my heroes. If she said it, I believe it. And now everybody looking at me crazy again, like I work some voodoo. Like, I got some text messages yesterday. It's all your fault. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm getting blamed for this because they really believe, like, I got some superpowers that I ain't really got. Because I predicted it based on Dr. Wells' prediction.
Fascinating. That original interview is back in the archives, 2014. If you go back in the archives, you'll see or you'll hear the exchange about her workplace situation, different part of the world. She was in Japan, but you'll hear a lot of the details that she just updated. A lot of that conversation specifically about workplace racism. One thing I would say, that's why I've said consistently just on the job, and I can speak from personal experience and, you know, from what a lot of y'all have shared over the years that we've been doing workplace racism. I'm not saying every time, but I have seen enough situations where a black person in particular, where they were doing something, just messing around, just being funny or whatever on the job, and somehow, some way, it ended up making a problem or it ended up not working out the way that they had hoped that it would. That's why I just recommend or discourage the horsing around and messing around in the office. And I'm a very playful person myself, but I would just discourage that because it's just in the system of white supremacy, everything is already weighted against you anyway. It just does not take very much to disrupt things and have even the most benign. That's why I've said that about candy dishes. It can be something as simple as that. Hey, who wants, you know, we just put out a little candy. Everybody can have a jelly bean every other day or what have you to just add a little enjoyment to your day. Have something pleasant that you would like to eat, a little bit of candy or what have you. And I have seen where even that can cause a variety of problems for black people. So I tend to be a big advocate of no jokes, nothing. Don't bring in any props, crystal ball or otherwise, into the workplace. Other folks that, if you all have questions, about anything that you've heard from anybody, Kamisha M. Africa situation, Triumph situation, being in business for herself, any of the other callers that we've heard, if you have questions about what they've shared, feel free, or if you have your own situation that you want to discuss, feel free with that as well. Any other callers that we've missed completely who had commentary?
Yes, sir. I'm the Earth.
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus, all the listeners and callers. So workplace experience that I had yesterday, since Trump got in office, I was coming from Whole Foods yesterday, and a car full of white guys drove past me yelling out Trump, Trump, I didn't know what they were saying at first. But then the car got closer. They were like, Trump, Trump. And I'm the only black guy coming out of there. So I'm like, all right, they're directing this for me. And I already had a sense that it was going to be some hostility. So I am licensed to carry in Pennsylvania. So I did bring my firearm, the extra magazine. So that happened when I got to work. Just as like other people expressed, there was a lot of people happy, high fives, thumbs up, stuff like that. This one guy, he had there was a wall shirt with Trump and making a muscle, I guess. I guess it's similar to the feminist movement logo. You guys remember that from the 50s or wherever that was, the lady making a muscle, but it was just Trump making a muscle. And then I noticed that the non-white Hispanic guys, they were pretty much upset. I never heard them really talk too much about politics, at all. But they were pissed off. And before that, they kept trying to convince me to vote as well. Like, saying, oh, I should vote so that Donald Trump get in the office. And I didn't say too much, but it's just standard activities going on here. I think that they are going to get a little turned up once he actually moves in, because I got that feeling. So I'm just trying to prepare myself mentally and physically. And that's all I have to share. I'll be
prepared mentally and physically, right on. I'm sorry that things had to get to the point that you felt the need. You said you had your firearm when you were being accosted, terrorized by these whites who were yelling Trump. I'm sorry you had to experience that, but from the reports that I've seen from listeners and just checking the news in general, it seems like that has been pretty common in the, I guess, 48 hours or so since the election concluded. Which is why I state consistently that our behavior should reflect that war is being waged against us at all times, so that we can just be prepared, be alert, paying attention to what's happening around us, particularly this week, but just knowing what's happening around us so that we can make constructive decisions. It would be wonderful if we didn't have to think that way, but this is the system of white supremacy, and our behavior should reflect that consistently. Do we have other folks? I don't think we missed anybody. Anybody we haven't heard from? I think we got everybody.
I'd like to encourage Triumph. I just made $200 today off Craigslist. And I sold a hydroponic setup because I grow plants. You know what I'm saying? I got some peppers, some basil, some collards, some Swiss chard, some baby broccoli, some kale, you know. And I had an extra tent that's just getting dusty in the garage. And I put together like a plastic container, some little nets. I mean, a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, stuff I bought, so I priced it on Amazon. Amazon keeps a history of everything I've ever purchased since the year 2000. I bought this tent, this grow tent, back in 2011. I paid $65 for it. The light I bought was $55. I priced it out. Everything I gave this guy today was $180. But he gave me $200 in exchange, and it was used equipment, all of it. And I could go online today and repurchase it brand new.
That's awesome. I want to encourage people. They have anyone with a smartphone. They have barcode scanner. It's a barcode scanner application. They're free. You can download it. What I have encouraged my mother to do, because my mother is a shopaholic, and she has scores and scores of clothes from years back, clothes she never even wore, clothes that still have the tags on them. And so I took her into her closet with the barcode scanner on my phone. And if you're on Amazon, if you scan a barcode, it'll go directly into Amazon. So, and if it's in their system, then it will pull up your item, you know, what that particular item is going for on Amazon. So I have my mom, she got all of these clothes that she's not going to wear that she's purchased from years back. I have her scanning those items and putting them on Amazon to sell and to make a profit. She, you know, she everything she getting from Ross or TJ Maxx at a discounted price. So I'm trying to motivate her to put her into that type of business. She's retired. This is something that she can do from her home. It's not invasive. She doesn't, you know what I mean? She can fulfill it herself, meaning that she can mail it to the people herself. But I encourage anyone to do that with any items that you have laying around your house that you're no longer using, even if it's not brand new. You can sell used items on Amazon and eBay, and it's a great way to start your business because it'll spark an idea. Just something that, you know, sitting in the corner that you're not going to use, if it's in good condition, scan it and see what Amazon is selling it for. See how much money you can get for that particular item. It's very, and once you make your first $5, your first $10 or $20, it is very, it's motivational. It will spark a fire within you. It will spark courage within you because a lot of what I still struggle with is the fear. I mean, I still find myself sitting around sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like I had 2 months this year that were slow months. And I go back and forth with myself. Oh my gosh, should I go back here and get a job? You know, I have a family to support, and it's still anxiety and fear that I have behind not having a steady white person's paycheck and going to deal with these people, and I just have to fight my way through it and be brave. You know, I encourage everyone, it is not easy. I'm not, what I'm telling you, stepping out, you know, outside of your job, by no means am I downplaying how difficult to make that type of decision and scary that is, you know what I mean? So I'm not downplaying that at all, but at the same time, I want to emphasize how difficult it is not. It is not as hard as you think. It is not as complicated as they make it. It is not as expensive as you think. You do not have to have thousands of dollars to start a business. You can start a business. You can start selling stuff in your garage right now and start generating money to put back into a business to build your business. So I just want to encourage people. It is not as difficult as you think or as complex as you think. And in the age of technology and smartphones and all these applications and Amazon and eBay, it is so many ways that you could just start generating small income to supplement, even if you're going to keep your job and you just want to supplement your income. You know, they don't want to pay us what we're worth. They're never going to pay us what we're worth. Instead of doing that and fighting with these people, start on the side. I started on the side. I worked my 9-to-5 job and sold things on the side for two to two and a half years before I was comfortable enough to say, okay, I can do this. So.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
In reference to what the young lady just said, I actually agree. There's one thing I want to add. I had asked Mr. Fuller about the word success a couple of weeks ago on the other show that he does. And he had stated specifically, and he agreed with me when I said that no non-white person is successful until the system of white supremacy is over, period. And just the reason why I mentioned that is because of everything that we do and everything that we say, if we are not solving this problem, and I look at it from a child, just from when you have children, if you have a child that says, I want to be a lawyer, and that child comes to you and they bring you a piece of paper that states, Dad, Mom, do you know that the average black lawyer makes 80% or 30, whatever the number you want to throw in, just throw it in, you know, 30% less than an average white person. And you can look at them and say that that's okay. We have not solved this problem. So just keep that in mind in everything that we do is we have people like Gus, and I'm not trying to get emotional, but like Dr. Welsing, Dr. White, all these people have not even been compensated properly for what they're supposed to have. And that's in the code book for what Mr. Fuller talks about, is that us as victims of racism, we don't even know what we're supposed to have simply because of this system. And I always think about my kids and what they're supposed to have, they don't have it unless all of us, even when we're at work, are trying to solve this problem. And I just wanted to make that statement because sometimes when I even focus on business, I say, okay, I'm doing a transaction, but what am I doing to solve this problem? Because the next black loan officer that comes behind me is just going to be a statistic. The next musician is just going to be a statistic. The next doctor, the next physician. I just think about somebody like Dr. Welsing. She was beyond undercompensated because of the system of white supremacy. And unless we end it and solve the problem, all we're going to do is have a generation of people just doing transactions. I could be incorrect, but I just want to make sure that we're focusing on ways to solve this problem. I don't want that young lady that just spoke to be a business person, but at the same time, you're not even being compensated what you're worth because of racism. And that's it. I'm done. Sorry, Gus.
All right, on. Appreciate that. I do want to make sure I get in there, folks. I've also concluded that just under this system, until this system has been permanently resolved, ended, that we're unfortunately going to still have a sizable number of non-white people, black people, who are directly working for whites. So in the meantime, if folks still have issues and are trying to minimize problem as best they can, as we go about the business of trying to solve this problem, if folks have situations that they would like to share, difficulties they're experiencing, trying to figure it out, or if you have figured out some successful strategies, that would be great. Certainly, if we have other entrepreneurs, always welcome to dial in, give your experience being quote-unquote self-employed, as they say. Feel free to chime in with that experience as well. The number again is 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Hopefully, folks will not be spectators. Dime in if you call in. If you have commentary, questions, observations you would like to share, please do not wait till the last minute. Do other folks have any questions? Anything else they want to make sure they share?
I totally agree with you, Gus. I do not feel successful at all. Even though I have checked out of the system, you know, I'm living on very, very small means simply because I couldn't take looking at white people every day. I'm living off a third I made working for the Department of Defense. But my original plan was to, which I did do, cash in my TSP, you know, and you know, get my mind right, regroup, not have to depend on white people, start my own business. But it went totally left, you know, like, and I knew I had some issues, you know what I'm saying? Started going to the Veterans Administration for treatment, you know, PTSD. They done diagnosed me with PTSD, major depressive disorder. So now I'm 90% disabled as a veteran, you know, and I don't feel bad about it. That's a compensatory act. I submitted a claim, you know what I'm saying? Well, because I told them either I'm crazy or I'm telling the truth. So apparently they have diagnosed me as being crazy, and so I get compensated for that every month.
Dig that. Doesn't seem to be a problem to me if you're going to be compensated and white people have harmed you in the first place. I don't see a problem with that at all. Is that a problem, them compensating you for this?
Not at all. That is my goal. I'm at 90%. I was originally at 80. Now I'm at 80 because I filed a second claim, and I'm working on 100.
Oh.
I mean, that's a compensatory act to me to ask for what I need. You know what I'm saying? When I have been denied the right to fully be the person that I can be. And I'm going to say this simply because none of this is doing me any good right now. I got 3 associates, 1 bachelor's, 1.5 master's. I got a master's in adult education, and I enrolled in another master's program simply because I had some money left on my 9/11 GI bill, and I got paid $1,748 a month just for going to school. And I needed that money. So, you know, but I ended up quitting because I couldn't stand the instructors showing these videos, you know, it's supposed to be about minimum wage, up in the minimum wage, but they're showing black people. They're showing black people talking stupid, you know what I'm saying? Like, duh, minimum wage, you know what I'm saying? And, like, I'm boiling over in a classroom in a master's program, and I'm walking out of class like, you know, forget this. Even after I left corporate, I'm still having issues, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
That sort of thing happens very, very common. I think we even talked about that with people going through med school. I know we had different black people that were in the medical field on the program last year, and some of them were saying the same thing, going through medical, the training, going through med school, that they had to watch these videos, and they were promoting all these ideas, racist ideas about black people, and discouraging black females from having childbirth, and talking about black people as criminals. That is pretty common as you are advancing and trying to get your various degrees and education throughout the system. It's going to be rife with white supremacy, racism, something that a lot of us have to deal with. A lot of us just get tired and say we're not going to deal with. The person that dialed in, 4789, did you have commentary with regards to workplace racism?
I just had a quick comment about the entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. I think it's very tricky these days because it's being advertised a lot. It was being advertised a lot on at my campus, and I see it everywhere. And I think it's very tricky because one of the things that I studied is the time value of money, and with the way that money is being valued and what's happening with the Fed, it's very difficult for you to understand loans and to understand what the value, the actual value, not what you might get back in terms of the figure, but the actual value of the money that you get back from either your business or when you're paying back your loan. So I would study as much as I can, and I studied a lot about this, and I'm confused right now myself, and so I would be very careful about borrowing money at this period, because you just don't know the value of the money and the value of the money that you're going to pay back, because you might be paying back 100 times what you borrowed due to the fact of changing interest rates. So it's very tricky, the actual interest rates that the Fed hands out. But I did have a question about workplace racism. I'm going through a process about goals, and I was wondering how people have handled goals. I tried to do my goals, but the person that looked over my goals basically said that my goals were not specific enough. And I was just wondering, I don't want to be, I don't know, to show off my accomplishments or whatever, but I do have to do my goals. I was wondering how people have approached their goals on their jobs. Thank you.
Is this a submission for your company, or is this a personal assessment of your goals? Just more information for who this is for.
Yeah, I guess my old jobs, it was sort of outlined. They were more outlined specific, but this one is sort of it's both personal and professional, and I have to write them. I just haven't been in this situation. I don't know if anybody else has, where they're writing their own goals and they have very little assistance from their supervisor or manager.
I see. And so if you could help us a bit more, what were some of the goals that you listed originally where they, kind of told you to take it back and work on it some more?
So the major complaint was that my goals were not specific enough, that I didn't outline the things that I wanted to do in specificity, and that Yeah, what's interesting that I just started the job, so it's difficult for me to have outlooking goals because I just don't understand that much about the role. I could like outline the things that I've done. So it was like, I was thinking I could just write the things that I've done, but I don't know the role well enough. And I try to tell the person that, but it just didn't work. I just didn't know how to approach the situation. Maybe I'm not being specific enough here.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was going to say that exactly. I'm still just trying to gauge, like, what were some of the goals that you, like, do you remember, like, one or two of the things that you put down since they said you weren't being specific enough?
I mean, some of the first ones were, like, sort of, like, generic, like, you know, like, I want to learn and whatnot, but then there were some specific ones about the program that I was working on, but it seemed like the person wanted me to be like super specific, like outline, like I would set up like a goal, like for example, one of my goals was to basically finish this program that I'm handling by next year June, and I laid out some of the things, like three or four of the things that I wanted to get done in the specific program. But it seemed like the person wanted like super details, and I don't know if I could obtain those details or like if I'm. I don't know how to put this. I'll think about it more, and then I'll ask it again next week when I have like a better way of phrasing the question.
Okay. Did we have people who wanted to comment on this goal setting and trying to be more specific about goal setting?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, this is Ori again here in Dallas. I have a few questions because I actually just had to do the same thing, but I wanted to know, are you actually setting your goals or are you completing your goals out? Because what we do at my job is we call them PMPs. And early in the year, around maybe the end of the first quarter, we have to make sure we lay out, you know, specific goals that we want to accomplish throughout the year. And then at the end, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, we actually have to go through and complete them and give an update on them. That way, once the year rolls back around, you know, that's what they how they gauge our bonus and our pay raises and things like that and promotions and stuff. And so usually what they want you to do, when you say be specific, my job, what they usually look for is goals that they, what they call measurable, meaning something that they can kind of gauge, like you give them, okay, this is where I am and this is where I'm going to be by such and such date. And so they kind of like to see, you know, percentages or, you know, statistics thrown in there. Like when you were saying they want you to be kind of a little bit more specific, you know, they're kind of looking for the process that you are going to take to get to, you know, the end result. They basically want kind of a checklist, something that they can look at you at the end of the year and say, okay, yeah, you did this, you did this, you did this. Okay, you completed that goal. And so that's kind of what they're looking for. That's what I'm thinking they're looking for. So.
At least it seemed, if I'm recalling correctly, it seemed like a part of the problem was the caller feeling as though maybe he didn't have enough information about the roles or the company or the specific parts in the process of completing some of the tasks, even specific project he might be working on. It seems like he might have been missing information that might have been an obstacle to him being specific about these goals. I know you said you were going to take some time to see if you were formulating the question correctly so people wanted to respond, but is that a part of the problem that you were having also, sir?
I think the missing part was, now I realize what I didn't say, that was, so my I would say my direct supervisor, I told him that I was supposed to do these goals, and so they assisted me on these goals, and then the person that looked at the goals turned them down and said that they weren't specific enough, and I went back to my supervisor, and my supervisor showed me something online that I didn't feel was adequate. Let me just say that. I felt like I was still sort of put. I felt like I was put on an island where I didn't really know specifically what it is that I had to do. So I guess my question, a better way to ask my question, is how do I repeatedly maybe ask my supervisor for more assistance without getting into trouble? I guess that's a better way of asking that question.
First, you know, I don't know how you guys communicate. Do you usually normally communicate through email?
Yeah, we communicate through several ways, like email, talk. Like I've walked to his office. Yeah. The more that I think about it, I feel like I don't know if I should get these two people to talk with each other
That's actually what I was going to say. You should call a meeting, but send it through email, that way you can have an actual paper trail. But call a meeting with both gentlemen and have them, you know, sit down and discuss the goal setting process. And also, I would contact HR and get your job description printed out. Get what your job description printed out, so you can actually have that and set your goals according to what your job description, you know, entails. Now, you know, some jobs may want you, like with my company, that I work for now, they don't want your goals to have anything to do with your job description. They want you to, what they say is go, I'm using air quotes, no one can see, but they want you to go above and beyond your job description. But I've also been with companies who want you to just excel at your job duties. So it kind of depends on what their goal setting process is, but I would call a meeting with both gentlemen and have them sit down and come to some sort of agreement about the goals that you set.
Thanks. No, yeah, that was really good advice. Thank you. And thank you for allowing me to sort of like talk through this, guys. Thanks. Yeah. And thank you for the caller. Yeah, that was really helpful.
Not a problem, brother. Not a problem.
We have anybody else who had questions or suggestions for our caller dealing with the goal setting and seeming like maybe two different whites antagonizing the situation?
Yeah, I had a quick question about the loan situation. You said be cautious of the loans, and I was actually thinking about somewhere along the line of next year taking out a loan on my 401k, so that way I could try to go ahead and try to start purchasing condos, so that way I can get myself in a position where I don't have to clock in somewhere and be terrorized for 8 hours throughout the day. So that was something that I was thinking about. So now that he said that, I don't know if that would be a good idea or what, because I was trying to save my pennies as well, and then also possibly trying to take out a loan and then start purchasing condos in like different states and trying to rent them out, so that way I can keep some type of monthly income. But now he got me thinking, so I'm not sure if that would be a good idea. But, yeah, I was just curious about the whole loan aspect.
Can I make a quick comment?
Let's see. Is that the caller at 8950?
Yes. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. I'll get the other caller as well. 8950. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Hi, this is Josh from Michigan, and I haven't called in a couple of weeks. Just speed you up on what's going on in my job. I had a big issue with my job and went to a meeting with my managers, and I got compensated for some things that they were doing incorrectly, and they got my manager to do some manager training to sort of correct her suspected racist terrorism against me and other non-white and white subordinates of hers. And I was also feeling, having negative thoughts about system white supremacy in our place, and just not having a positive outlook on just being to live a viable life. And so they were going to give me some therapy. And I remember last week at the end, I told you that I was trying to either get a white therapist or a black therapist, and maybe if I was going to get a white one to practice counter-racism, but then I decided to take my mental health more seriously, not worry about practicing counter-racism on any white person, but maybe try to get my health in order, my mental health in order. But then I remember I mentioned Gus saying something like, paraphrasing, that non-white people don't really qualify as mental health care professionals because of the system of white supremacy. And I've really been thinking about that. So I've really been thinking about how I can best maximize my options or choices about therapists in my area. So I called my job back and asked for a list of black therapists and white therapists. So I have two lists that I'm looking at. And my family's been getting on me to really hurry up and select someone. And I kind of got them upset at me when I said, well, I kind of agree, you know, we're all damaged. Mr. Fuller also says that we're all poisoned by white supremacy, and that if we go into contact with other non-white people, that we should be polite and courteous, like the whole elevator scenario. You get on the elevator, you say hello, you get off at your floor, you say goodbye. You know, you should be like that to minimize conflict between non-white people. And so when I was researching the therapist, I was trying to discern whether if just from their online bios, if they'll be able to, what their credentials were, you know. I'm sure they're qualified. It's not that they're not qualified educationally. It's just I saw one of them as a non-white so-called black male. His eyes were a different color, so I assume maybe he has a white parent. And I figure if I don't know if I can go in there to speak to him and be honest about the system of white supremacy, because if you have a white parent, you have a tendency to not be as honest, or all white people aren't racist. So I was kind of worried about that. And then on the other non-white ones in my area, they're sort of faith-based, even though they're not totally faith-based. And I know that religion is a huge crutch, and or a huge, in a similar fashion, having a white parent, it makes it difficult to be honest about the system of white supremacy too. So then I'm sort of confused that maybe I'm thinking too much. Maybe I should just go and speak to one of them, and instead of trying to discern things like that, to see if they're going to give me less conflict by choosing a non-white psychiatrist. And then there's the fact that, you know, I agree for a variety of reasons that don't qualify because you're a victim of racism. And so I don't know, but then I was thinking maybe victimization aside, that they might just have tips and techniques that I can use to help cope with, you know, just being alive and being a black person. Maybe they can just give me tips that I could use aside from whether they're more confused than me or less confused than me on the system of white supremacy. So, I don't know. It's caused a conflict with my family, because they really want me to get to speak to someone. And then when I said that, it's kind of like, you're taking this whole white supremacy thing too far by saying that no black person can be a qualified, you know, mental health care professional. And so, and if I call a white person, I feel like I would be talking to a rapist, like a rapist, a rape victim talking to the rapist about how they feel about them raping them. You know, I think Pam, the Chosen Horse, maybe gave a metaphor like that, and I agree. So,
I guess if I could hop in, one thing I have never said. I would, you know, if you can provide the evidence, I will recant and admit that I was wrong. Oh. But I have never said that black people do not qualify as black mental health professionals. I've said that black people do not qualify for mental health, which is restating.
That's what you said. My mistake. Right. That is what you said.
That is very important. As it relates to black counselors, a black therapist or a white therapist, we've talked about this before on the program many times for years. I know Blacka, he's been a guest on this program more than once. The position that he took, and he was someone who dealt with depression, we talked about it on the program, he got a white therapist who he said helped him deal with depression. And he said that he thinks of it as, if we're talking about going to see a therapist, a psychiatrist, or what have you, you want someone who is going to give you strategies, techniques that you can use to help yourself, not someone that you're going to have to go and talk to them for, you know, the next 20 years before you can make a competent decision using your own brain computer. That's one. And I think, two, if it's a session where you specifically are trying to talk about racism, at least in my view, I think it would be best if you can find a black therapist that you are comfortable with, who is a little bit less confused about racism, so that that conversation can be welcome and that you can talk about it accurately in the way that you see racism, that can be encouraged, welcomed, and they can still provide you with some strategies and information so that you can help yourself. That would be my view. I think it's just one of those things where you just have to go. I've heard people who've had black therapists that were not very helpful, that still didn't encourage them to talk about racism. And then I've heard other people where it was the exact opposite. They got a black therapist, they were great, they encouraged them to talk about racism. They allowed them to speak however they, you know, conceptualized racism using the term white supremacy. That was allowed, that was encouraged, and that was a part of the process of trying to refurbish yourself spiritually, mentally, physically, and that was a part of the mental health process. So I would say just go try out the person, if you have that ability, if you can go have a session or two with them and see if it's going to be something that's compatible. Try to get a black person if this is something where you know you want to talk about racism and your thoughts on racism and how it's impacting you. I would suggest try to get a black person. If you can find one where it works out, great. If you do a session or two and it's not seeming like you all are building that rapport where you can talk about racism, try to find a different one. And I think they have databases available where you can see if they're black mental health professionals in your geographic location, and you can try them out and see if it'll work. But that would be what I would suggest. And just make sure, clarify, I didn't say black people don't qualify as mental health professionals. Just black people do not qualify for mental health, as stated by Dr. Francis Cress Welsing.
I'm pretty sure you said that. Yeah, it was my mistake. I think I just misheard. But yeah, I think I agree. Now I'll just try picking, just picking one that's black and then just going from there. Because I have multiple sessions, so if the first one doesn't go well, I can always try someone else.
Mm.
But thank you.
Take that. I know that's got to be rough. I don't want to take that lightly either. If you're being pressured either on the job or from people that, you know, care about you and you care about to go do this and what have you. I know that can be difficult. Definitely take quality care of yourself. If you need, you know, some time just to think about things, process. I know writing can be good as well, but I certainly hope you are taking good care of yourself and managing that as best you can. Other folks have comments they want to share? Our caller who just dialed in or any of the other folks that we've heard from, do you have questions or comments that you want to share?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Gus, I actually forgot about another incident that took place today, too. My coworker, he works on a team with me, and he had gotten a call from a psychopathic white terrorist. And from the moment the call started, he just went off on some sort of silly tirade. So my coworker, within seconds of the call starting, he said, "I'm going to have to end this call," and he hung up on the guy. Because the guy was just cursing and just being completely disrespectful. So we don't have to tolerate that kind of conversation, so we can end the call. And in seconds, he ended the call. So afterwards, he was telling me what took place with the guy and the person that called right back. So I said, "Well, let me get the call. Let me see what he has to say. Because I said, if he does it with me, he's going to have round two of getting hung up on."
So I answered the call. Excuse me. And originally he said, oh, I want to, you know, report, speak to a supervisor. I want to report your coworker for treating me rude on the phone and this, that, and the third. And I said, well, let me get your information first so I could pull up your account. So in the short amount of time that he verified who he was, he rethought his situation. And he goes off into this whole spiel about how he needed to see a physical therapist, and he has these hernias.
What?
That are, I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Oh,
yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so he said he has these two hernias, and he's in discomfort, and he just needed help finding a doctor. So I said, okay, so I'm starting to help him, and then he really starts to trip me out. So he says, I'll do anything to get a doctor as quickly as possible. So I said, well, hey, I have to escalate this to another team. That team will do a detailed search to make sure we get you in contact with the right providers. So then he's like, oh, I have money. If you want, I can meet you after work, and I'll give you a bundle of money. I said, I don't need your money. I said, I'm here to do this job. You need my assistance? No problem. And so I escalated the ticket and whatnot, and I told him, well, it usually can take, 24 to 48 hours for us to get the information back from the other department, but I'll expedite it. So I did put it through expeditiously for the member, but because he was so rude to my coworker, I'm making him wait for 24 hours before I send it. And when I got off the phone, I ended up talking to my coworker again, and he was like, well, hey, how was the guy? I said, well, his tune completely changed when he talked to me. And I went into explaining to him that, the guy said he was in severe discomfort. And I said, well, maybe that's what made him behave himself, because I'm sure he didn't want a round two of getting hung up on, because I was mentally prepared to just cut him off immediately. And it was just another incident of white people acting white and practicing racism. Thank you, and I mute my line.
Clowning. And I think that sort of thing is important, too, because I think we've had so many different people who talked about the emotional toll that white terrorism takes on us, and it totally does. But when you can kind of, in our codification, if you can kind of shield your emotions as best you can, as Roz was just talking about in that situation where I'm already prepared, if he's going to be, cursing and being tacky, no problem. I already know what I'm going to do. I'll be getting my dial tone ready and, whatever my spiel is to exit the phone conversation, and boop, that way I'm not mad. I'm not cursing the rest of the day. I'm not fuming and that sort of thing. I think if we can more consistently deal with our enemies, whites, in that sort of fashion, we'll be much better. We'll be making a lot more progress and not getting upset and not being stunned every time that they come at us in that manner.
Hey, Gus, can I speak to that? Because I think that's extremely important. It's something that I've experienced quite a bit in my work history, where white people really, because I've always said I believe that racism is a combination of psychopathy, sociopathy, and narcissism. And one thing I find is that they love emotional attention, and they will do things to garner upsetting you in a way in which you respond emotionally, and they feed off of it. It takes me right back to Delectable Negroes, the form of consumption. And to me, when we get agitated and white people either see us upset, distraught, angry, or any of those emotions, it's something that they get off on. They really enjoy it, and they enjoy manipulating us and putting us in situations where we feel as unempowered as possible. And one thing I do is whenever I do encounter a white person that is irate or aggressive, I immediately take the complete opposite approach. I'll just take a deep breath or whatever. And then from there, I just speak to them as calmly, methodically, and direct as possible. And I find that the less emotional I am, the more emotional they become. And I tend to end up either having them respond in a way that's more respectful, or they'll even hang up the phone because they can't. It's like they don't get off on hearing me be calm. They would prefer for me to get angry and get into an argument that they can escalate to a supervisor and potentially use to agitate me even further by threatening my job. So it's something that I definitely say is a pattern with them. and it's a form of consumption, vampirism, cannibalism. And I think, Gus, you made a very brilliant and salient point in regards to taking an approach that is the opposite of what they are expecting from us, because they do this to feed off of us. Thank you. And I'm meeting my line.
For sure. For sure. Thomas in New York, did you have commentary you were going to add, sir?
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all the callers. I just chimed in. I'm going to my second plantation. I did have to, I want to make a call. I wanted to share something that happened on the first plantation job this week, where I took off Monday and Tuesday because I had to go to orientation for my second job. And they only do orientation once every 3 months. It's for the hospital, so everyone from nurses to doctors to everyone was in this one orientation. And before I get into the orientation, so I called out sick to my first job on Monday and Tuesday. So when I got there Wednesday, the lady wanted to speak to me. She called me into the office, and she asked me, you know, if I was still dedicated to this job, because she knows I started another job. So I said, yeah, you know, I was ill the last couple of days. I didn't want her to have the indication that I took off for the other job. So she says, you know, everyone likes you here. You know, you're very articulate and presentable. And I just had, you know, that cow's moment, because, of course, well, someone was just mentioning the articulate a couple of weeks ago. I'm also presentable. So I thought that was, you know, that's pretty much how you look at me, as a presentable, articulate Negro. For the other job, the orientation, we had a whole segment on workplace violence, because unfortunately it gets very violent inside of the hospital. And what I learned was the most violent department in the hospital is the one department that, you know, they actually said, you know, for people to guess, and no one got it right. But it was labor and delivery. And they showed us a sequence of videos which had black people very prominently fighting each other in labor and delivery rooms. You know, that better be my son's kid, and, you know, and all this type of stuff. And I just felt like it was very interesting, because for every little segment that we did at this orientation, they displayed, showed a video to kind of hammer home their points. And this was the one segment, every part that had to do with workplace, and this was a four-hour class. All of the videos had nothing but black people in them. I thought that was very interesting. Even had to do hands-on, because some things have gone down in the psych ward, so you had to learn how to defend yourself against this, or maybe a potential knife, or, you know, what to do if there's a suspected shooter. It was very hands-on, and it was very interesting. And I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Now, what, excuse me, what Thomas in New York just said about those videos, at least in my opinion, that is one and the same with what we heard earlier in the broadcast. Kamisha M. Africa, where she was saying, going through and you're getting your degrees and all this, and then you go through the educational process, the training process, and they've got all these racist comments about black people and white supremacist concepts. That is consistent throughout the system of white supremacy, and a part of the frustration that we experience just being inundated in the system of white supremacy. But those videos that he talked about, and the training and showing black people, always, doesn't matter whether it's Empire or training at the hospital, got to make sure that we promote that idea of black people. We are brawling with one another, animosity towards one another, conflict towards one another. Just make sure that we show that constantly. excuse me. Other folks who dialed in, we got, I guess, max of 20 minutes. Any folks that we have left on the line who had comments, questions about anything that you've heard, or if you had anything that you wanted to share?
May I be heard?
Yes.
Let's see. I guess we'll go Triumph, and then we'll come back and get the caller at this Ori. We'll come back and get you.
Thank you. I had a moment to think about other aspects of racism that I experienced being in business, and two things that stick out that I go through constantly with white people is white people showing up and feeling as if they have the right to question me about my business. Where do I get my goods? You know, like they come with a whole entire plethora of questions as if I'm obligated to tell them anything. Or, you know, like they have a suspicion, maybe I'm selling stolen goods, things of that nature. That happens all of the time to where, you know, I shut them down. I give them kind of like the you buy or you go kind of speech. But I'm very firm and direct with them. And it's taken me a minute to get a little more comfortable within, you know, my interaction. The reason why I'm just so gung-ho about trying to get black people to go into business for themselves is because in some shape, forms, and fashions, it changes your interaction. It changes the relationship between these people with you. So if I don't, you know, I'm not in a situation with you to where, you know, I'm working for you or I have to come to you particularly, you know, for something, it changes my posture to where I can deal with you however I feel that I want to, the way that they deal with us. You know, if they having a good day, maybe they want to come in the office and be nice and offer you some brownies. And if they having a bad day, maybe they just want to come in and, you know, be a complete, you know, show their true colors. So I'm very direct with them. I don't give any discounts or any type of help at all with white people. I won't haggle. Another aspect of what I see constantly with them in their behavior is that I'm a female, my partner is female, and we're dealing with furniture. So they'll come, sometimes they come as a couple. It'll be a husband and a wife, and they're white people. And when it comes to moving furniture, you know, big, large pieces of furniture, they have an expectation that me and my female partner are going to move it for them. Or, you know, we constantly have to step back and say, you know, you and your wife have at it. Like, you know, they're shocked that the white wife has to do any lifting, even though we're two females as well. And I just look at that, you know, how they view black bodies, how they view black women. You know, they think that we're strong, like we going to do the heavy lifting. Man, I never do the heavy lifting. I don't care if a white lady came and bought some furniture. She looked like she was 65 years old. I said, either you going to have to lift this sofa or y'all going to have to hire somebody to do it. But those are two behaviors that I constantly get from white people being in business.
Do these folks have to come to, like, to your residence? Like, have you codified how to deal with that, or is that not an issue?
Well, I for a long time I was doing it out of my residence. I was living in an apartment. When I started out doing this, I was doing it in an apartment, and I was blessed to buy my own home. I was doing it out of my garage for a time, but now I moved up to where I have like a large, you know, a really large storage unit, so people are coming there instead of coming to my residence. But for a long time, I did it at my residence.
I would definitely say that seems like a part of the process where I say we refine as we go along. That, I mean, that's the case with anything that you do. If you paint, if you build houses, if you attempt counter-racism, you generally get better at things if you keep doing it. So in my view, that would be part of codification. I would I say that for a workplace, period. Really make an effort to keep whites away from your residence so they don't know where you live and that sort of thing. Try to minimize that as best you can. That can just create a variety of problems down the road. Whites, I mean, just the vindictiveness and what have you, man, it can get way out of hand.
Gus, can I ask a question of Triumph real quick?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. I find her story very fascinating, and I greatly appreciate her telling her story as well. I was going to ask because I know that a lot of times when people sell things off of Craigslist or eBay and stuff too, there have been incidents because, like what you were saying in regards to meeting people at your apartment or potentially at your place of residence where people have been robbed or assaulted. And what I've been seeing on the news for the last couple of months is that there's certain cities and states that are setting up what they call safe zones, and specifically for people who sell items on Craigslist and places like that, where they can meet with the person that they're going to exchange the product with or whatever the case may be. That's a safe area that essentially there's like a, I guess like they would have like an officer on the premises, but they're just there to make sure that nobody's, you know, hurt or attacked or whatever the case may be, and give you a safe space that's not your personal residence or a place like Les was saying where people can find out where you live so that you can perform your transaction in safety and then go about your business and the other person go about theirs. So I was wondering if she's ever heard about that or if that was something she would think about looking into just for safety's sake in case, because, yeah, these people are psychotic. Thank you, and I'll mute my line.
Yes, Georgia is the place where they have that here. This is where it was an elderly white couple who went somewhere in South Georgia to buy a Mustang vehicle, I believe, and the people went down there to buy the car, and the guy shot them in the head, you know, and took their money. So that happened in the state of Georgia. So Georgia implemented, I don't know if it's statewide, but I know that they have it here in DeKalb County where I'm at, where they have like safe places for you to exchange your goods. Because I'm dealing in, safety is an issue. It always has been an issue. I'm a licensed concealed carry. You know, Georgia is open and concealed carry state. I'm licensed to carry my weapon. The place where I have my goods is very bright. It has many cameras at every single angle. So these are all things that I took into consideration when I checked that spot. And you know, me and my partner, we are very I don't like dealing with the police from any aspect. I don't even care if it's a situation like, okay, the police have a safe zone set up for you to do your goods. I am not willing to put myself in a position where I have to deal with the police unless it's absolutely 100% necessary. I'm not going to volunteer to go and be anywhere where police are being active. So I just try to be proactive with my decisions, and I try to be proactive with, you know, my safety, my self-defense courses, weaponry. Always being vigilant. We have a team or a buddy system to where typically neither one of us are ever by ourselves in the situation. So that's the way that we operate with that. But they do have that here. I'm just not, you know, police are on, man, they are on a need-to-do basis.
I totally agree with you. I can't stand law enforcement. I agree. I was just concerned just because I know you said yourself and your partner were females. So it's really, really refreshing to hear the safety precautions that you've taken thus far. And I wish you all the best in everything that you do. And hopefully you'll have as little terroristic contact with those mutants as possible. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much. Oh, and Gus, I wanted to share that right now I'm currently reading the book Tragedy and Hope by Carol Quigley. But that particular book, it's such a nice correlation with the, not to get off subject, but the book that you have going on right now, the rise of people of color against white supremacy. But within that book, it's a history book about how white people have used, or how economics were developed to basically usurp power, and how they constantly refined and transformed their systems of economics to basically take power and take power and take power. And in the same breath, their economic system, Western civilized economics, started small with manors, or people who were just exchanging, you know, agricultural goods in exchange for funds. So I just wanted to say that because that's a good example of starting small and starting where you are, and then that just slowly builds and it generates ideas and it generates other systems. And that's what white people have done from their inception. They've just They started small, and they've taken and generated other systems from what they've been able to build upon. So,
Carol Quigley, Tragedy and Hope, History of the World in Our Time. The caller, 8950, was that you? Did you speak up simultaneously? Did you have commentary to share?
Yeah. I had something else I wanted to mention, too. I took a second job as a substitute teacher, and my first assignment was at an all-black school somewhere around the suburbs of the Detroit area. And it's just, I was kind of excited for the most part because, you know, it's first time in a work environment where, you know, 9 out of 10 people was black. So, you know, that was interesting and fun. But the kids were like really rough, really rowdy. It's kind of like the stereotype of the movies where the white teacher goes to the ghetto and civilizes the, you know that whole stereotypical thing. It was kind of like that, except I'm not a white teacher, you know. Less holly, you know, not that exaggerated, but, you know, just lots of horseplay, lots of disrespect, you know. And I get the whole thing when you're a substitute teacher, you really don't get the same respect as a regular teacher, so they're going to, you know, try you a little bit. But it's just, so the first day, you know, just getting taken advantage of by the kids, just, can I have a pass to the bathroom? Can I have a pass to my locker? Just hundreds of kids doing that. Or can you please lower your voices, kids? You know, no one's listening. And, noticing that the school, just typical, you know, majority black school, you know, lacking resources, poor quality, lack of resources and everything, you know, nothing that's their fault. This is some white supremacy at work. So first of all, I was trying to be patient, especially with non-white, especially black people, just wanted to be patient and try to help them. But then like second day, same story, same disrespect, same problems with all the students. I even turned around and there were two like 12-year-old girls like making out like in the class. I'm like, what are y'all doing? This is a math class. But I got into a small shouting match with the young non-white black male, and I was just frustrated, you know, not knowing how to exercise, you know, a parent-student relationship, and also trying to, you know, encourage young black pupils to take their education seriously. But I don't know how many substitutes they didn't had. And whenever I pass out like a sheet of work for them to do, they're like, we did this yesterday, or we did this last week, like this same form. So like they're getting like no substantive work, you know, and it's just frustrating seeing that they're just like wasting their time there. And like the other non-white black teachers, what they tell me to do is, you know, just send them to the principal's office and suspend them for 3 days. You know, they're not going to listen to you. This is a rough class. Here's a stack of referral slips, and send their little behinds to the principal's office. They'll get suspended for 3 days and let them deal with it with their parents. Let them negotiate that. But that's the only tool that you have at your disposal. And I'm just like, really? Because I didn't want to try doing that, you know. So I didn't do it my first 2 days, and I tried not to do it my third day. But I did it yesterday. You know, I sent the kid to the office. I mean, he didn't get suspended, so that was okay. But it's just, I don't really know what to do. So I was wondering, any victims listening to the line that knows how to deal with rowdy students, anything, any tips or tricks that I can use. And also, one other thing, I had a question about the concept of victimization. I know we use the word victim a lot in, I know, so the United Independence, where everyone's code is different, but, you know, Mr. Fuller and you two a lot, Gus, use the word victim in referring to yourself or other non-white people. Whenever I do that, a lot of times I get non-white people who say, why don't you stop, or even white people too, why don't you stop referencing yourself as a victim and pull yourself up, you know, and work hard and, you know, the whole bootstrap thing. And we, both white and non-white people, seem to have the rationalization of like a white supremacist talking point, you know, the whole bootstrap thing, or you're not a victim, you're only a victim if you allow yourself to be, and blah, 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 blah. But that's a sidebar. You don't got to answer that one if it's not workplace related. But I'll mute my line.
Hmm. That is interesting. That'll be an interesting spot to end at if we have any educators or people who have experience, not necessarily just educators, people who have experience with children about how to deal with that sort of situation. One thing I can say I think is important, particularly in that sort of environment, you were saying suggestions on what to do. As someone who has worked as an educator and worked specifically with black children who have been abused and mistreated and their education has been disrupted in general by the system of white supremacy, and then they, you know, children that missed a lot of time from school and that sort of thing, where they just had a real tough time in school where it can be a hassle. I mean, that is putting it mildly, where it can just be really, really challenging. And I think, you know, again, within the system of white supremacy, they can do such a phenomenal job of just totally destroying your enthusiasm for pretty much anything. The system of white supremacy, it contaminates everything, so it can really just things that we should enjoy and just have robust pleasure in learning and being at school, they can just make that the worst thing in the world. And that's what happens to a lot of black children. They just get frustrated and disgusted. They have all these racist white female teachers that probably voted for Trump. And it's just, you know, horrendous. It's just a different type of experience of the same thing that we go through, being at the job or wherever else we happen to be in the system of white supremacy. So I think having that in mind and just trying as best you can to be patient, to try to teach them what you can. I think remembering, as frustrating as it can be, remembering that racists are most to blame for whatever problems they're presenting in the classroom. If they're disengaged, if they don't want to listen, if they're just disgusted with all of it, that's what the system of white supremacy has planned. They already got plans. They got a nice jumpsuit planned for a lot of those children, or a lot of other really poor jobs, or maybe some legal cannabis, depending on which state they happen to be in. They got plans for those children and how they're going to be abused and misused in terms of trying to get through to them. I think if people had that answer, that might be worth quite a bit. I think people have different strategies. I'm a big proponent of just being truthful about finding some way within that setting, if you can, in terms of just getting through to them about trying to get whatever information that you can to try to keep your self safe, realizing that there is a war against you, and trying to make that as clear to them as you can under difficult circumstances where you might not have the freedom to speak your mind in that manner about what's happening and why they're frustrated about things. I know it can be really, really challenging, and sometimes there is no answer. The system has already done so much damage that for some of those children, they just don't want to listen, particularly not in that environment because they've had so many bad experiences and been mistreated so much. Any other folks on, if folks have experience with children, any suggestions for how an educator can deal with that sort of environment?
From the experiences that I've had with young children who are going through quite a bit, is if I've found sometimes just taking an interest in them and taking an interest in what is going on in their lives and allowing them room to be open with you. They may not tell you everything, but you might get some more insight into why they're functioning, how they're functioning, and that might help you to facilitate giving them ideas on how to avoid the types of emotions or to deal with the emotions in a constructive manner so that they don't tend to act out. I remember a few years back, there was a younger brother. He's not an adolescent, though, but he was a gangbanger from Texas. And I got to know him online, and I just mentored him. Not really mentor. I don't use that term as Jenna, but most people are familiar with the term mentor. But basically, I would just build with him for a long time. We talked. He ended up having a high interest in learning more about African history and culture, which we did. And eventually, just from the discussions we had and the books that I suggested that he read and the spiritual discussions we had, he ended up going to college and actually getting initiated as a Yoruba priest. So, and it just took me being a guy who used to run the streets, speaking to a younger black male who was in the midst of gangbanging with the Bloods and had shootouts with Mexicans and all kinds of stuff in his local area. And I was able to just allow him to
to be himself and be honest. And once I got to know him, then we just established a trust where things developed to that level. So it is possible. And like I said, sometimes, sadly, there are some of our children who are just so damaged by the system that you might not be able to get through to them. And if you're not, for any reason, you know, try your best not to take it personal and think that it's something that you did, because some of our children really go through like a horrific time. And by the time they encounter you in school, they're fed up. And it could, and it might, you might be, I don't know if, well, he's a black male and you're a black male, so that might also be helpful, because a lot of times he may not have a positive male role model or even a father in the household. Not saying that you would have to become his father, but if you can at least play somewhat of a surrogate role when he's in your care, eventually he might open up to you and eventually start changing his behavior based on the relationship that he develops with you over time. Thank you.
Got time for one more comment. Anybody else have another suggestion, technique? And I think, yes, the caller, he did say that there were two 12-year-olds, adolescents, who were making out in the classroom, two 12-year-old females, I think he said. Final suggestion before we wrap up?
Yes, sir. I'll be hurt.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I know for me, when I was in high school and middle school, sometimes I would act out. And we would have substitutes from time to time. Sometimes we didn't have to stare at the teacher. So some of the substitutes that came in, they would present different things to us that would catch our attention. Like I remember the one substitute teacher taught us about the real Machiavelli when we used to always talk about rap music. So I was a big Tupac fan. So he taught us about Machiavelli, and that kind of got like the classroom to calm down. He started asking us questions like, who is the real Machiavelli? Nobody really knew. So we were just coming up with all these crazy ideas, and that helped. And I guess that eased his day. He just had like different methods of showing us things that we never even knew before. Whether it was always like something historic, but it would deal with something that would grasp our attention. Like I said, he used like hip hop, for instance. And then sometimes like he would show us movies and then ask us like specific things about it. So that helped for me. But like I said, I was a student there. I didn't actually work with kids. I was just a student. So that helped me and most of my peers calm down. And I hope that was helpful.
Appreciate that. I'll try both of you. I'll try all your suggestions out tomorrow when I go in tomorrow. Appreciate it. Thank you.
I would just add briefly, if you can find things that they are passionate about and encourage that and find some way to connect that to whatever it is that you're going to be teaching or talking about, I think that's always helpful as well. But I would say just anything that they're passionate about that is constructive, try to encourage that as much as possible. I've seen that can go a long way as well, because a lot of those black children, just if someone reaching out to them and being attentive, listening, a little empathy, a little patience, that I've seen where that can go a long way as well. But just remembering patience, I think that's one of the most important ingredients in trying to move forward and have constructive contact with black people. Patience. Mm. That has been 3 hours for our Workplace Racism segment. Thanks to Kamisha M. Africa and all of our other callers, Triumph, longtime listener, investor, and Roz, Thomas in New York, other folks who dialed in, 1842, all the folks who called in to share their commentary, observations, suggestions. Great hearing from you as we proceed. Certainly, if you have any experiences on the job with what happened with the election and folks getting at you about who you voted for, or, you know, checking in as though you are sad or depressed because Trump won or whatever else, you can make notes and feel free to share as we move forward. This is every Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, when we do Workplace Racism. So you can feel free. You can email. If you know you're not able to participate live, you can email your situation or your thoughts, and we'll read it during the program. Thanks so much for everyone tuning in. We'll be here tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. The book was already mentioned, Lothrop Stoddard, The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy, should be especially relevant given what happened this week with President-elect Donald Trump. We are on Chapter 4 in the book. This is our third session, though. Very, very early. It's free. It's available online. If you want to download an ebook version, you can have it and read right along with us. That's tomorrow. Compensatory call-in is this coming Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. If you have other questions, problems, guest suggestions, if you can't find something in the archives or just have a gripe in general, the email again is untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. That said, I will again submit sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I think you heard some of the folks even saying just trying to get to work and they were being accosted by race soldiers yelling about Trump and what have you. I don't think in that sort of situation it's going to improve things for you to have a 12-pack or an eighth or any other sort of intoxicants, narcotics. I could be in error, but I have never seen how that makes us way better counter-racists to be under the influence of something when we go out and try to deal with race soldiers. Just keep that in mind, particularly if you're going to be behind the wheel. You do not want to be intoxicated. That's whether you're the driver, the passenger, even as a pedestrian. You never know when today will be the day that it's time for you to meet Daniel Holtzclaw, Darren Wilson, any other race soldier, badge or no. Whites are dangerous, frequently armed, and they're dedicated to waging war against black people. Enemies, I think that's what they call people like that. Enemies to black people. We should keep that in mind and make sure we can use our brain computer to the best of our ability to try to keep ourselves as safe as possible and make phenomenal decisions. All areas of people activity, 24/7. Being sober would help in that effort, I think. I could be wrong. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.